Hello, human peoples. You're listening to the podcast network of Gamefully Unemployed. Support us and gain access to great exclusive podcasts like Fox Mulder is a Maniac, Tom and Jeff Watch Batman, Star Trek The Next Futurama, and our latest show, Spiel Boys. Head over to patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. We do game streaming, movie nights with our patrons every Friday night, and you can even commission your own podcast about anything you want. Literally anything, within reason, and we have to do it. You are quite frankly out of excuses not to go visit patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. That's patreon.com/GAMEFULLY unemployed, which is spelled like it sounds.
Podcast mit Tom Reimann und David Bell.
I drank water and it made things worse. Hold on. I'm okay. Everybody's okay.
Is it like drinking water, just drowning a little bit at a time?
A little bit.
Just like, I just want to drown for a little bit. Just a little bit of drowning. A nice refreshing nip of drowning.
Yeah, just for like in the mouth. The mouth is drowning, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But then it goes down the hole and you're like, ooh, am I going to drown? Nope. Goes to the other hole.
Goes into the tunnel hole. Like, yeah.
Yeah, we have the two holes. I don't know how we switch between the two.
Nobody knows, Dave.
It's a bad design, right?
It's a complete mystery because it's on the inside and we'll never know what's going on in there. The people have been guessing for centuries and nobody's been able to figure out how we have two different holes, one for our tummies and one for our lungies.
Mm-hmm. I'd argue it's the worst design because
it's not like, great.
Yeah, because it's like, okay, we have this hole that goes to our lungs, and if that hole gets blocked, we die. Mm-hmm. But also, you're going to cram a lot of stuff in that hole over time. Why not just the nostrils be the lung holes?
It's like putting the self-destruct button next to the ice cream button.
Yeah.
They're too close.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
You have thoughts on the hole distribution.
Yes, I do actually, which is that I actually have something called EOE, which means my esophagus hole is getting narrower and narrower. And there's like a real chance that half the time, like if I eat something like a popcorn thing, it might end up in my lung instead of my tummy because the holes are just not the right size anymore.
Sounds terrible.
That's awful.
Yeah. but to fix it, here's what they say to do. They say you can cut out eggs, dairy, shellfish, nuts, soy, and sugar. Do it for 2 months and then just start adding them back in and see which ones like are causing the reaction. I was like, oh, I'll just die on popcorn. That's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or what if you like put a bicycle, like swallowed the one end of a bicycle pump and then just like pumped it up, you know?
Yeah.
Pumped up your little
esophagus.
You'd be surprised. I know we have a lot of movies to go through today, but you'd be surprised by how many procedures are like, yeah, just put a little balloon up your nose and just crack that open.
Yeah.
Oh. Do we want to get started? Do we want this to be the show?
We can. We can make this the show. This feels like the show.
Feels like the show. Hello, everyone.
Hi!
Welcome to another episode of Hypecast!
Hypecast!
This is the show where we get hyped about stuff and things. I'm your co-host, Tom Reimann.
I'm your other co-host, David Bell.
And I'm Drew Grant. I'm here too. Hi,
Drew!
Guys. Hey, Drew!
Hi!
Welcome!
Thank you.
Always a pleasure. How are you?
Happy to be here. Doing fine. I decided I'm going to do some active listening and speak closer to the mic this episode. Trying to like take notes from every time I'm on Hypecast and listening to other guests about like the best way to be on here and also make it not go 2.5 hours long.
So, we have a lot of trailers. I think a few of them I'm going to like snap. We're going to be snappy, right? But why do you need to take notes?
I was going to say, I have dedicated myself to not learning anything every time we do this.
Oh, because yeah. I play this back for people because I'm like all proud of myself. And then like if I like see my partner and he's like, huh, and he just like lightly chuckles at something I say, or I can see him like kind of wince if I interrupt. I'm just like, oh, okay, no, like that's just not the. I want to have good podcast energy.
It's podcasting. Everybody interrupts.
I was about to say, I understand that. To me, good podcasting energy is a bunch of white people interrupting each other, and so that's what we have here. So we'll be good.
You guys have all a great dynamic set with it, though. Like you guys, and I do that thing where I'm like, oh, sorry, you go. Yeah, it's like you doing that weird, like running into someone on the sidewalk kind of thing where you're both ducking.
All of our friends, I think that our sundry friends and their podcasts across the crack diaspora and related things, I think we're all very conscientious interrupters.
Mm-hmm.
We're all very polite about it.
I hope so. I'll let you in on my secret. I don't listen to myself in any podcasts because if I did, I'd never be in another podcast. that's how I do it, is I just can't. I just can't.
That's how I master it.
Every er and ah, every interruption is just like a knife. And so I just don't. I have no self-awareness. That's how I do it.
That's how I do my writing, or it's at least, that's how I used to write. Now I'm like reflexively, compulsively rewriting every sentence I have ever done. But I used to do this thing where I was like a power blogger. I would just go through like 5 articles like per publication per day, and I worked at 4 places. So like putting out like 20 articles of just like random nonsense. It's because I never spell checked. I just like, everything was stream of consciousness. It was so easy back then. And now I'm just like agonizing.
The day one run on sentence.
The salad days.
That's the salad days of digital media.
True. What are you up to? Do you have something you want to plug for these fine listeners?
I mean, I do. This show is coming out tomorrow, which is today your guys' time. I'm the editorial director of a site called Passion Fruit. I think I've spoken about it on here before. We are a creator labor website that focuses on issues surrounding, creatives and online professionals who need some help in terms of, you know, learning about the issues, learning about their rights, and learning about what platforms do and do not do to protect you and your money. So tomorrow we actually have an event coming up on our Discord. It's our first ever live event. We're going to have Brandy Posey coming in and talking to us about creator bookkeeping. So that's going to be fun. So if you're interested, check out my Instagram or Twitter or whatever. I should have a link to the Discord, and it'll be a fun event.
And the webpage is, for the record, passionfruit.it.
Yeah. I mean,
right?
I didn't come up with that name. But
no, I mean, it's not. I actually think that makes it more memorable. Like, for example, I knew that. Like, when you said passion fruit, I remembered, passionfruit.it. So I don't know. It's quirky.
Yeah.
It's got a little attitude.
It's just because I came off of the trauma of coming from a place called .LA. So it was .. And then there was a period in LA. And like trying to say that out loud to get people my email was.
Sounds like a nightmare.
It's like a who's miserable. On first. Yeah, it was not fun. No, and then there is a dot, LA.
Right.
Yeah.
Everybody check that out. Yeah. I assume if you Google passion fruit, you will get the fruit and hopefully also the webpage.
Oh, we're not doing well on Google right now because we seem to have some search engine issues backstage, but just go to the website. Yeah. Sign up for the newsletter. I write a newsletter weekly, and it's always fun and quirky and my only creative writing outlet at the moment. So,
right on.
Yeah.
I would argue Google is not doing well on Google lately.
No, it's not.
It's been pretty bad there, yeah.
It made a decision. Choices were made.
Choices were made.
Well, as that snake eats itself, why don't we get into some trailers?
No, Tom, why don't we thank some producers?
You son of a
starting,
bitch! All right, let's
starting
do that.
With a big thank you to @NerdNumbers.
Thank you.
Thank you to Zero Charisma.
Thank you so much.
Thank you to a bag full of bags.
Thank you.
Thank you to Aaron Burser.
Thank you.
Thank you to AJ.
Thank you.
Thank you to Andrew Howe and Andrew McGuire's Awkward Meet Cute.
Thank you so much.
Thank you to Andrew. Drew deserves more hype, McGuire.
Thank you.
Thank you to Asking Seven.
That was serendipitous. Thank you. And Drew. Let me jump in here. Thank you to Bob Grenville.
Thank you.
Thank you to Boomer Boomerson.
Thank you.
Thank you to Brian and Tom Knows. Thank you to Broccoli Loves the Meat Millie.
Thank you.
Brita wants you to drink water, hit the gym, and do the ska, because they loves y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you to Chester's Prophet.
Thank you.
Thank you to Christopher Robert Sparts Esquire.
Thank you.
And thank you to Dan Hackroyd.
Thank you.
Am I supposed to say thank you? I've never known the etiquette there.
You, okay. It is optional.
You are not
it
obligated
is...
to say thank you.
Yeah.
For those listening at home, we are now doing this over Zoom, which means that Tom and Dave can like see me. And I feel like that adds a whole new dynamic of like when I'm like leaning into the mic, like about to jump in and hesitating. Like I feel like that's like a whole new. I don't know if you're putting this video out anywhere. I hope you do. Setting a whole
it's
new.
Weird. It's. For the longest time, we podcasted in person, mm-hmm. and like early podcasting, it was like even like people were trying to be like really professional with studios. Then the pandemic hit, and we all learned something about how lazy we can be about podcasting. And then lately, I've brought back Zoom, and it's like weird to see people again.
It's great,
even though that's kind of yeah, it is great.
No,
it's
it
like
is.
The natural.
It helps the episodes for sure.
Yeah, Alien Romulus. Alien Romulus.
Ooh. Why did you have to start with this one? This is the one I'm going to go on for about 45 minutes.
Yeah, same. it's what's their name? Fede Alvarez?
Fede Alvarez, oh, yeah.
It's going to be so scary. I mean, it was terrifying. I did not know this was coming. I forgot they were making this. I am also a huge Prometheus apologist, though. Like Prometheus and Alien Covenant, because I really think David is like one of the best.
No, I do like David. That's that was a good character little trip that we took with him through those two movies.
Yeah, my view is that Prometheus is a very interesting and I would say a good sci-fi movie and a terrible alien movie. Mm-hmm. And they shouldn't have, you know, it's like he felt pressure to add aliens in it is what it seemed like.
Well,
I just think they should have stuck to the android shit, I think, but
you know, there's this whole thing. They had that whole website. I think I've mentioned this before on a Friday night movie night, but I think I'm the first person to ever hack into their back end of their ARG site that they set up for Prometheus. No, like, seriously, the back end of the site, which tells you a lot more information about like how these things connect. It might also have like a Blade Runner connection.
They hid all this in the back door of the website? Well, I guess it's all the stuff people didn't find, maybe, right?
Yeah, this was stuff people didn't find. I mean, there were like secret passcodes and stuff, and people seemed to have found the code. They thought it was a password thing, but it wasn't. It was just an extended part of the URL. I just found it by going on the Wayback Machine and looking at the sitemap and was able to like bypass.
Like a hacker.
Yeah, but I found out like, you know, why David is the way he is and like all this information that I feel like other people don't know of Weyland Yutani. So again, I could go on for 45 minutes, but I do like the idea of this also just being a reboot. Maybe David's back in it. I don't know.
So what we know is that this takes place between Alien and Aliens. I keep saying, and I've said it before, that I really think this should just be Ripley's daughter, and they should have just done Alien Isolation.
Yes.
Alien Isolation,
the movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I read a little more, so as you guys can probably assume, Romulus is of course the name of a ship. It's the name of a Weyland Yutani research station, according to what rumors I've seen, that has been abandoned for like 100 years, and this crew is going on. I that could still be Ripley's daughter being involved in like, but yeah, Alvarez of course did the Evil Dead remake and Don't Breathe.
Oof.
Two movies that I would argue are very well directed
and terrifying. Like, just absolutely viscerally upsetting. Mm-hmm. Like, in the way...
I thought...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I thought Don't Breathe was a little silly. Don't Breathe.
Don't Breathe.
But, yeah.
Oh, I was thinking of Crawl.
He'll heal you.
He'll heal you.
He did Crawl, right?
No, that was the other guy that he's friends with, I think, did Crawl.
Oh, okay.
But I was thinking, yeah, Don't Breathe is not as good as Evil Dead. Evil Dead was such a take. What a take
yeah.
to be like, I'm
that
not going to make this
awesome
movie funny.
That was a pretty awesome take, yeah.
Yeah. Like, just,
and the promise... the promise here, right, is... They're going back to horror. And I would argue no alien film has really gone back to horror since the original.
No. Yeah,
and they're going back. Yeah, and this is going to be
Alien
gory.
3,
they're
you
very,
don't think?
I still think it's a little action-y. Like, it's still, you're like,
a hard trope
you're right, that's the closest.
It's
probably.
A hard trope of you fuck Charles Dance and then he dies immediately. Like, he's not a virgin anymore, so he has to die. Mm-hmm. So that feels
that's like true. Happen in other movies? Has that proven true across multiple films?
It's just true of horror movies. Once you're not a virgin anymore, you die. Is that
it was specifically a trope about Charles Dance.
Charles Dance, you fuck Charles Dance, he dies.
He's radioactive like dick.
Don't you remember that?
Curses you.
That Godzilla scene where he just like fucks Vera Farmiga, and then just dies off screen. Yeah. I think actually
he's
still
King
alive.
Ghidorah. No, I think he lived at the end. Anyway, we're getting off topic.
Yeah. This movie looks amazing. It looks amazing, and I wonder if there's like a Romulus connection like in this Weyland Yutani text file, this giant set I found. I'll
maybe
get back to you about it.
Well, isn't it a moon? Isn't Romulus a moon?
It's a band.
I mean, it might be, probably.
It's also a band. It's a band.
No, it's actually that it's abandoned. It's an abandoned space station. We went over this.
Romulus is also a planet in Star Trek.
It's also the name of one of the wolves from that
Live within you?
No. You know, the two wolf children. It was Romulus and the other one, and they...
Remus.
Yeah. And they had a mom, and was this Beowulf or something? No, it's not Beowulf, Drew. That's just saying
it is mythology. Yeah. They also have two plans, Romulus and Remus in Star Trek. I doubt that'll be part of this.
It could be. Star Trek crossover?
Oh, it'd be amazing.
Oh, my God. Well, it's also
some Borg aliens.
It's also Roman Roy's real name. So maybe this is like a Succession, remake.
Yeah.
This is part of the Jesse Armstrong
universe. Fuck it.
Yeah, why not?
No, I mean, this trailer looks great, right?
It's a cool trailer. I'm sure the movie is going to be very violent. I don't know how scary Alien can be anymore, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think so. This actually had something in it that made me go like, oh, God, is the face huggers like bursting out of that door and like, oh, my God, a cluster of them like spiders.
The close up of the pulling the tube out of somebody's throat. The face huggers.
Yeah,
that was that because that there's a similar scene to that in Saltburn. And that got me in that movie, too.
Wait, a tube? Somebody got an alien in them and slide? Watch that movie. What?
At the end when he yanks the feeding tube out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's the part of Saltburn you found upsetting. Okay.
No. That is one of the parts I found upsetting, and I thought this was similar to it. It's a similar image.
Yeah, I mean, I think what he's going to go for here is kind
visceral,
of the grotesque, visceral body horror of being torn apart or having these things shoved in your orifices. I don't know. That's like the H.R. Giger alien tradition that we haven't. I love the first four Aliens, don't get me wrong, but they, after James Cameron came in, they kind of pivoted, and they went more of like, more towards action thriller, I would say, and this just really looks like they're going back to Haunted House in space.
And what I love about it is just like, you know, the idea of aliens are not scary to me, like the big mother queen, whatever, they have never really been scary. The only scary part about aliens to me is the part where they go inside your body and like they're that body horror of like it's an infestation of aliens. They don't have to be big. They could be like they're just so many of them. Like I hate bugs, and to turn them into giant bugs is like a really smart move for this.
Yeah, have them kind of cluster and like I
it's like the opposite of the Engineers, whatever those were, you know.
I will say one thing, which is that and this is sort of...
Sorry, I'm just thinking about the Engineers. Just dudes really into fitness. Giant space giants really into fitness.
Yeah, swole aliens. They do look like Greys if Greys just worked out a lot.
Yeah. They all look like Dr. Manhattan. But yeah.
They do. No,
just Greys throwing up reps.
Yeah. The only thing, I guess, quote-unquote hit against this is that it's just like, what's the point? Like, it's like, oh, they're in a big abandoned spaceship. There's an alien. Yeah, I've seen that. It's called Alien. You know, like, but that's like literally any alien film you make has that issue, which is like, why are we even making them? This is, in my opinion, kind of the best version. It feels more like a remake, for sure. But like, it also feels like a wonderful recalibration
I think it's like a requel more than anything, like if we're going to use those terminology, because it seems like a return to form, whereas Prometheus...
Yeah.
Well, no, Prometheus felt like it was a remake of like an alien movie. Like it was taking a different tone. It's a different genre of movie. It's like hard sci-fi. It's way more about like philosophical issues and stuff, whereas this feels like a return to the original Alien, like you said, like this grimy aesthetic. It's horror. It's claustrophobic. So a requel.
Yeah, and I do, for the record, I think we should make millions of Alien movies. I think the charm of them is you get a unique director to do their take on Alien. I think we sort of lost our, like, again, Prometheus is great, but I think we lost our way with that on, like, what the fun of Alien is, which is pick a director, pick a setting, put an alien in there, see what you can do with it, you know? So this just feels, I don't know. And you, again, I think you could argue that James Cameron even like made that amazing film, but that redirected Alien. And we sort of forgot like, well, why not just make a straight up gory slasher horror movie again?
I mean, have you guys read the Alien comic book series? Like there's many of them. There's like millions of them.
I read a few of them.
Yes, yeah. I have. Yeah.
The one that's like, I forget what it's called, like Skull and or like Bones and Ash or something like that, where it is like, it turns out David is a prophet like of like the new society of cyborgs.
I haven't read any since Prometheus has come out.
Yeah. No. I read like the old one, the Alien vs. Predator comics. Yeah.
Yeah, there's apparently some really good. There's some really good graphic novels that take like that bridge Prometheus and Blade Runner and Alien into like one meta narrative about the rise of like the uprising of like synthetics people.
Right.
And I think that's just really cool. Really into it.
That is.
And then adding Predator to it is very stupid, but I kind of like that too.
Oh yeah, I just I think
Predator
that
anything is that's it. It's kind of stupid, but I like that too.
Oh yeah,
anytime Predator shows up,
they should still do Aliens versus Predator versus Batman. I want a full movie version of that.
But Lance Hendrickson is he still with us?
Yeah, he's still with us.
Okay, Lance Hendrickson, you can be in it because he plays last. Point about this, he plays one of the Waylands, but it doesn't necessarily have to be Guy Pearce's character. It could be a different dude, like his grandfather, I think me and Lon figured out once. Like, there's a way the timeline works where Guy Pearce can still be a Wayland, like, guy.
Related to Lance Henriksen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Or it's like, and well, they do the same thing on Star Trek with Data, because they keep bringing Brett Spiner into, like, the Picard sequels and stuff, and they're just acting like his, like, lineage is just so inbred that he looks exactly the same, and his grandsons look exactly the same. It's weird.
I think, Lance Hendrickson, I think, is Guy Pearce's grandson through Charlize Theron, which is what it is, yeah.
It's fucking weird. You know what? It doesn't seem like they're going to bring back his Sigourney Weaver. And I do... I'm of two minds where I'm like, I actually could see a way to do a Sigourney Weaver movie or have her... I don't know.
She was supposed to. It was supposed to be that guy who does, you know, Chappie.
Neil Blomkamp.
Oh, yeah.
They were filming that when I interviewed her once, and she, like, told me that they were doing that movie, and then by the time it came out, the profile came out,
wild.
She made a liar out of me. So.
Well, I think that it's ultimately, like, we've seen a very bad pattern of them doing that and being like, we brought back Jamie Lee Curtis. It doesn't matter that the movie sucks. and so, like, that's why I'm kind of happy that they're, like, one of my weird critiques of Alien is that I'm not sure you needed Sigourney Weaver to keep coming back. I'm glad they did, but like it's weird because then we kind of tied it to her, right? And then there's this weird expectation of like, well, she has to come back, and it's like, does she though? Like, can't
David's like David's like, you know what would be great if we did Aliens without the female heroine? Can we just make this more of a?
I mean, it can star a different female heroine. I mean, Prometheus did that.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. It's just funny because it's like her and Sarah Connor are the two action like hero, and Jamie Lee Curtis, I guess, in the more horror direction. But those are like the staples of like strong female characters in movies. So,
oh yeah.
Arguably, I feel like they did need Sigourney because like the role was written for a man, and she just made it her own, and like that.
Oh, I mean, you needed her in Alien and Aliens. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that like there's so many things that were kind of tied to the Alien franchise in terms of what does it mean to make an Alien film, right? Mm-hmm. Like, is Sigourney Weaver an essential part of that DNA? the same way Terminator, where it's like, is Arnold Schwarzenegger an essential part of that DNA? The answer is sort of like, so these movies might not have necessarily meant to be like serialized so much, but it's all to say that I'm glad they didn't try to do the quote unquote legacy sequel, right? Where they try to get as many actors from the original to bring back.
Yeah.
I'm just happy. I'm happy they kind of found a time, like an era of time where Ripley's asleep.
She's asleep
between the two movies to like tell this little claustrophobic story.
I'm very excited. I mean, I think this will tie into Prometheus. I do think this is all like a Ridley Scott's producing it, so he signed off on it the same way he signed off on Lindelof writing this whole like ARG rewrite of the script of Prometheus. So there's big lore there, and I just think that they this probably does tie back into the like the larger narrative in ways of, I don't think he would have like allowed the movie to be made.
Oh yeah, so I think they'll be.
Yeah.
Sorry, that I just wanted to interject and say that's like the thing that I do not care about in alien movies is the lore. I don't care.
But it's like,
here's the thing:
scary bug in space.
I think the lore works as essentially flavor text, meaning that like there's lore throughout the first four Aliens. It's just in the background, and it's like, yeah, do that. Like there can be a little bit of lore in this for sure.
That tends to be what we've talked about before. That's like where these franchises tend to lose their way when they get serialized. Is there? Well, let's go into the lore and.
I guess it's just my thing of like ARGs, like Under the Silver Lake, like movies that have not just Easter eggs, but like hidden. Like hidden stories behind the stories. And there is stuff like in Prometheus and Covenant and in the extra bonus features that is like a story that you have to unlock. And like, it's more of like a cryptology game. And it's like a geocaching. I just love that part of it where I feel like there's an extra level of play to involve yourself with it, you know?
Well, I think that is the purpose of comic books and video games and web pages, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's what it always used to be. And that's why I think like going what Tom said, like they lose their way when they start putting that shit front and center where it's like, it's good to know your lore in the world you're in and to world building, but that's not the story.
Point. Yeah. Lore is not the story.
Yeah. I mean, that's enough about that, but I will say Westworld and Weyland Yutani have the same exact logo. There was something else recently where it's like, oh yeah, this is like the whole culture of synthetic people. I think this might be one shared universe, and that's just my own headcanon. We can leave it there.
I like it.
Yeah. Sure, yeah. You know, the movie Soldier takes place in the Blade Runner universe.
Yeah, fuck it.
What?
Yeah, the Kurt Russell movie.
Oh, wow. In the Blade Runner universe? Wow, okay.
I mean... Does Ridley Scott approve of that? Yeah.
We
feel like Ridley Scott would not accept that, but
I was watching something recently where somebody was wearing a shield and like or like a backpack, some sort of like knapsack or something, and the Weyland Yutani logo was on. What was it, Starship Trooper, something like that? And the Weyland Yutani logo was on, like very small logo on the backpack. Yeah.
But yeah, Alien Romulus. I think it's going to be. They've made all these. They've made a few like both Evil Dead and Don't Breathe are essentially we're stuck here. We're being murdered. We have to escape. Mm-hmm. This is no different, except it's really way harder to escape in this case. So it's like this. I don't know. I think this is going to be that escape horror vibes, and it's going to be fun as shit. Like you can kind of feel like you know how it's going to go, right? Where there's like the small ship, the drop ship, the mother ship. Got to get back to the small ship. Got to get off.
Character-wise, though, both his films star women who are like severely damaged in some way, right? The first one's a drug addict. Jane Levy is like a drug addict, and that was like a really heavy thing to put in like the Evil Dead movie to set the tone for it. And then Don't Breathe, she's like a she's breaking into a home. She's like a part of a crime gang.
Yeah, she's in rock bottom,
So I wonder if there's going to be some like interesting interplay there. I don't know.
I mean, maybe she's looking for her mother who disappeared and it fucked her up.
Yep.
Decades previously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Should we talk about...
We should.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, this just dropped. Beetlejuice. Great title.
Solid title.
I didn't realize what it was. Yeah, that's fine.
Oh, yeah. I love the offer that they're like, Jeffrey Jones is dead.
He sure is. Yeah. It's like, how are they going to bring Jeffrey Jones back? Well.
We're not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the ground.
Yeah, go ahead and Google Jeffrey Jones if you're curious why they would do that. Yeah, Catherine O'Hara is there.
Alec Baldwin? Alec Baldwin, not. Gina Davis, probably not.
Probably not, yeah. I don't think the Maitlands are there. I think the Maitlands went somewhere. I don't know.
One of them is going to jail.
Yeah. I would argue that bring back... So I'm really happy to see O'Hara in there. I'm happy to see Winona Ryder. Mm-hmm. I feel like they're sort of going between these two ideas, which is that, like, my biggest, the biggest surprise to me is, like, why didn't they make Beetlejuice 20 years ago? Why didn't they make another one several years after the first one?
I think there's a book written about Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian or something. It's one of the more famous unproduced movies in Hollywood.
Well, you guys know, like, the original story, he was like a sex creep. Oh, yeah. So, like,
Jeffrey Jones?
No. Beetlejuice.
No, Beetlejuice. Oh. In the original
script, he was a sex creep. It was like a quiet on set.
He's like Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, but even more so. Like, he was, like, preying on Lydia. Like, it wasn't just like a, you know, he's trying to get married to her for, you know.
I mean, I would argue he's still a sex creep in the movie.
Way more blatant. Like, way more, like, predator, like, child predator kind of vibes. And, I mean, I'm a big fan of, like, bridging the Beetlejuice movie with the Beetlejuice cartoon in which they're best friends. Like, where did that come from?
Yeah, fuck it.
And then the musical came, and, like, that was fantastic, the Broadway musical. And that bridged that story about how they would, like, arc that character development. So, like, Beetlejuice and Lydia are both outsiders, and they both feel like they don't belong in their respective worlds. And, like, it's I think the musical's really good. I would have liked to see if, like, they could have gotten that guy back to... to play him. But Michael Keaton... Weirdly, like, underwhelming, like, moment for him at the end. I mean, I think it's great that he would say the juice is loose, but
it's a solid line.
It's very stupid. I love it. Yeah.
But also, is his pop culture references going to be like? Is he stuck in the 90s? Did he get like a certain level?
I hope so. No, I think it's the fact that he's so much older is he's covered in makeup, and I love that it's like, oh yeah, it doesn't matter. Beetlejuice can look immortal. Like, they don't have to de-age him or anything.
Why does he have to... Wait, he can't say his name. He can't say Juice. That's the whole point. He can't say...
Well, you can't say Beetlejuice. Oh, yeah, you're right. He had to mimic the whole thing. Huh. I don't know, man. Maybe he got a power up. But what I was going to say is that, like, when you think about, like, what if they made a Beetlejuice sequel in the 90s, they wouldn't bring back Lydia, I don't think. I mean, the cartoon's canon, but it would be, here's another adventure of Beetlejuice, right? Because his whole thing is he's a reverse exorcist, right?
Bio-exorcist.
But, yeah, he goes from case to case.
Or as they say in the musical, goes zombie Jesus, which I like that a lot, too.
So... I feel like they're trying to do both here. Like, they're bringing back the old cast, but they're bringing in a new person. This isn't like a criticism. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. I also don't care.
Don't have too much invested in it. Yeah. It's like, I love the original movie. I watched it a lot growing up, but this, I'm glad they finally made this, but if it's not very good, well, whatever. You know?
Yeah, I guess what I'm this is all to say I'm getting light Ghostbusters vibes, and what I mean by that is I'm like, why is it still in the town and in the house? Why is Lydia there? Why are all the characters back? Beetlejuice wasn't really one and done
to
thing.
This place, yeah,
exactly.
I think that's the thing. I think he is maybe. I don't
apparently,
think
but I don't know why.
Because the original that town. No, he can't leave. I don't think he can leave. He gets on that planet and there's sandworms. Like, he's like on the
Saturn.
Yeah. It just feels like it's that thing where it's like, you look at a character like Indiana Jones, right? And he sort of became Mickey Mouse, where it's like, he's got to have this, this, and this. He's got to have the hat. Beetlejuice is no different, right? You go to Universal Studios, you'll see Beetlejuice. He's walking down, he's a mascot. And so, like, there's this idea of, like, Beetlejuice has to look a certain way and be a certain way. And it feels like they've, like, added in, like, oh, yeah, you need the model. You need the house. You need the bridge. Like, all these other things that I'm like, why is it all in the same town? Why are we bringing back all these things? That makes me, like, a little hesitant.
Dave, isn't that opposite Ghostbusters? Because Ghostbusters just took the whole thing and put it, like, in the fucking, you know, in the middle of nowhere. Like, that's...
The first one did, but they're like, we got to bring back Slimer. We got to get the car involved.
Yeah.
And then this new one, they're going straight back into New York and stuff.
I just think, look, you opened the Pandora's box with this one and the Alien movie. Because I've thought so long and hard about Beetlejuice and, like, what his deal is and, like, what makes a Beetlejuice a Beetlejuice, like the characteristics.
Because what makes a Beetlejuice a Beetlejuice?
A Beetlejuice?
Yeah.
Is he like, one what, of what many?
No, he's one of one, like kind of like Lydia is, but like he, that's why he's so specific. He's like a, he's...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
He's not like a ghost, right? He's not a demon. I don't think
he's
ever
the ghost
human.
With the most.
He's a ghost with the most. Right. He's never alive, though, so he's not like a ghost ghost.
He was
like the,
alive.
No, he wasn't.
They say so in the movie.
I know. I think the original thing, though, is he's demonic. Like, he never had was, like, ever living. He also, when he says he's a bioexorcist, that's also just a lie. Like, he's just, he's conning them, basically. But he's conning the Maitlands into what he wants to happen, which is to hit for him to marry Lydia.
And free himself from, yeah, whatever. Yeah, you're right. He's got to free himself from that realm.
Exactly. So I just think it's, what makes a Beetlejuice has to be, like, that sense of, yeah, Freddy Krueger, like, play. It's got to be, like, big into, like, you know, doing different voices and stuff. So in that way, there's no, like, one voice you do for Beetlejuice. It's him doing a bunch of different voices.
He's
so
Bugs Bunny. He's very Bugs Bunny in a lot of the scenes. And especially in the cartoon, which I never really saw the cartoon, but I got some of it from osmosis, so I kind of know like what its general vibe was.
Yeah, they're best friends. It's him and Lydia. The Maitlands are not there, and it's him and Lydia riding.
And I've seen some
Sandworm.
Of the ghosts, yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen enough of it.
I mean, but why would they ride sandworms? It's what killed him. Or, like, what killed him?
Well, Gina Davis mastered the sandworm and drove it into him.
Yeah.
That's true.
So
she did.
Maybe that's what he's doing. He's like, well, I got to learn to ride the sandworm now so it can't be done to me again.
And
I mean, now I just, now I'm just assuming their afterlife is, in fact, the planet from Dune.
Yeah.
Like, I might as well have a crossover. Fuck it.
I think that's purgatory, like the waiting room. There's that, you know, Juno, the caseworker, all the people that are, you know, the shrunken head thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's, not going to go on about it, but, yeah, I would just love Beetlejuice to turn out to be Paul Atreides. That's just what it is. He's the last
Muad'Dib Beetlejuice.
Yeah, exactly.
I want if they did a crossover where like Dune 2, he slowly start dressing more and more like Beetlejuice, and like you just slowly realize like, wait a second.
He's like, it's showtime, and it's like just get that the Danny Elfman score, and everyone's like Muad'Dib, as it was prophesied.
By the way, this. This sequel has Willem Dafoe in it.
What?
And I am hoping, praying that he plays Beetlejuice's cousin
or
named
father
named like Centipede Milk or something.
Although, can't play Beetlejuice's father. Fucking Michael Keaton's older than him.
I don't give a fuck.
Is that true?
He can do whatever he wants.
I think it has to be true, right? They must be pretty close to the same age.
No,
actually.
You're right. I forgot. Willem Dafoe's in his 50s. He just looks so old, I think.
I think he's going to be the caseworker, maybe. But, I assume someone's going to die. There's going to be a caseworker. I don't know. I'm very hopeful for this. And like I said, I personally have nothing at stake here. I'm just sort of wondering, why is it all in the same place? Why are we bringing back, it's weird to me. It's weird when you go back to that question of what makes a thing, like what makes Alien Alien, Beetlejuice Beetlejuice. Oh, I almost said it three times.
Maybe the answer is that they're trying to resurrect Geoffrey Jones, like thinking that they can bring back the dad or like commune with the dad. So they're going back to the house where they know they can commune with ghosts, right? Because
that's a good idea. That's a good premise.
Because in this world, people like Robert Goulet and stuff like know that ghosts are real. Like,
well, he wasn't playing Robert Goulet.
Yeah,
also, he's got to be dead, right? They launched him through the ceiling.
I don't know. I love it when he says, like, he's the genius who made the talking Marcel Marceau statue. Like, that's maybe my favorite line.
Solid line. Well, Dave, I just realized.
Hold on.
You've been, what?
Sorry, I just, one more cast thing. I didn't even, amazing. Monica Bellucci is playing, quote, Beetlejuice's wife.
Yes!
That's all they have listed.
Yes.
Beetlejuice's wife.
Yes!
I'm like, hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Tom, what were you going to say?
I was going to say that the reason there's the mate, as far as we know, not the Maitlands, the Dietzes never left that house. Like, they were still living in the same house in the same town. So Catherine O'Hara, Delia.
Right.
Delia and Charles stayed in that house until Charles died.
Right.
Right.
But you guys get what, like, for example. Lydia in this is dressed and looked exactly like she did in the first movie. Mm-hmm. Isn't that weird? Like, isn't it weird that she is like a cartoon character? That she is like what makes her is like, wouldn't it be interesting, honestly, if she like grew out of being a goth? Not saying that everybody does that, but she
at the end of the
exactly
first
she did at the end of the first one. You're right.
That's because she's going to prep school. That's because she's going to a specific like kind of.
But she'd
prep
also
school.
Come right. out of her but shell and was being more of a sunnier
that
disposition.
Was, too. Yeah, make yeah. her like a fucking like weird like. Happy-go-lucky character in this who's like has to be reminded that Beetlejuice even existed or something like that.
I feel like that's the trope though, is like the she goes up and she grows up and she becomes like Hook. It's like she's uptight and she doesn't remember her childhood, yeah, whatever. Yeah, yeah. This is more like I got, right. look personally I got my first prom dress at Hot Topic, and yesterday I went to Hot Topic, and like the last Tuesday I went to Hot Topic, and like I will keep going to Hot Topic. This shirt is from Hot Topic. Like, they just have a really good discount program. And
they got rid of, they used to have so many more patches, and they had those cool sodas. Remember the sodas they had in the 90s?
Go online, man.
I go online. I get those sodas. Yeah,
I mean,
they're great.
It's worse. We are a group of people who still dress the same way that they did 20
yeah,
years
but,
ago. But
you get what I'm saying is yeah, that well, at the end of, I mean, even at
they
end, like you said,
at the end of the first movie, yeah.
Right, and it's like, okay, so Beetlejuice is an icon. He dresses and looks exactly one way because he's this undead creature.
Yes, my
Why
mom.
Is everybody else dressed the same way? Why is everything else exactly the same?
Well, and but also it seems like the house isn't lived in because like they have to pull the sheet off of the thing. So what happened to the Dietzes? Which, what kind of trauma happened that they moved out of their ghost friend's house, you know?
Right. Yeah, that felt very, again, like Ghostbusters a little bit, where they, like, the first... And they do the slow Deo, which I get they're doing, like, a choir.
Oh, come on.
But it has all the same, I would say, red flags to me. As, like, the kind of putting reverence on things that were just in the first movie as, like, a gag. That it's like, this isn't canon, right? This isn't, like, everything has to be this way.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I'm a little nervous about this based on that, but this trailer looks fun. Like,
did you see who's playing the Otto character? Like the it looks like he's playing the Otto character from the funeral. It's Bern Gorman, right. Which
oh,
I think
thought he was like the Reverend.
But that Otto is sort of like that. It's that, you know, religious figure. He's got the text. He's doing the ceremony, whatever. I guess I'm conflating a little bit with his role in Heathers, but I think that is going to be like the new mom friend or whatever.
He's in Watcher and he's great.
I love Bert Berman. What a name.
Yeah. We should keep going though. Oh. We should move on.
Mm-hmm.
My God. This is going to be. We got so many things to go through.
I'm sorry.
This one, geez, it's a big week. The Acolyte. Am I even saying that right?
Yeah, that's right.
This is a fucking Star Wars. It takes place 100 years before The Phantom Menace.
Mm-hmm.
And my only thing I want to say is this looks exactly like every other fucking show.
It's supposed to be a little different. This one's supposed to be genre. So like the way that Andor was like genre, like it was an action heist one. It had a great prison thing. This is supposed to be this is like their detective one. This is like before.
That's cool.
Yeah, so this is before the Sith have come back. And so it's like literally Jedi who are not like at this point cops. They're like literally just like a religious order trying to figure out like who's murdering them. I think spoilers, I think it's going to be Palpatine, but like, you know.
Probably.
Yeah.
I really liked Andor, although I still have the same critique, is Andor also took place in the same set. They're clearly using the same dusty Western set in every Star Wars show now. Like in The Mandalorian, there's like, here's a small planet town.
David,
in
sure?
Boba Fett.
That was like, it took place in an entirely different place. There was a prison. There was a whole like other planet that was like lush, and then there was like the town they lived in was
but
like a
brick
planet.
But they keep going back to that town. That's what I'm saying. The town set. Every Star Wars has that town set. I'm not saying they didn't go other places, but it feels like they keep going back to the dusty Star Wars town.
They all go back to Bonanza.
Yeah.
Yes, don't they? I loved Andor. Don't get me wrong. This is a very superficial critique. I just couldn't help notice that this one's like it's 100 years earlier.
Yeah.
And here's another one of those towns. And I'm like, I'm almost certain they're using the same town. And they're just trying to get their money's worth out of this one fucking town set.
And it's crazy. It's all in England. So who knows?
Right.
I did want to say, like, I haven't watched most of the recent Star Wars stuff. Like, I haven't seen Andor yet. I didn't see Obi-Wan. I haven't seen a lot of it.
All you have to do is see Andor. You have to watch Andor. It's so good. It's the only thing I would say you have to watch.
That's what I've heard. And I like Dan Gilroy. But what I'll say about this trailer for The Acolyte is I really like that this doesn't seem to be connected to any of the existing movies. Like, it's, yeah. It seems like it's the first one that's genuinely its own thing. Like, yeah. I have no idea where this story is going to go. I mean, I assume it's about, like, the rise of the Sith, or, like, the first time they show up or something. Yeah, or maybe not. I don't know Star Wars that well.
I just know what my boyfriend tells me. He does a lot of reactions for people who know a lot about Star Wars. And, like, yeah, it seems like this is, like, you know when the X-Men did that horror one? They did the, what was it called? The New Mutants?
Oh, the New Mutants.
New Mutants, yeah.
You know, but I think, like, the way that Andor worked, and you really need to see Andor, Tom. God, I can't believe this.
Yeah.
There's a 3-episode prison arc that's written by the guy who did House of Cards, Bo Willimon, that is absolutely incredible. Some of the best.
It's television. A fantastic show. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think getting, you know, they got a showrunner for this who has never seen Star Wars.
Like, that's awesome.
Or maybe like the showrunner did, but she hired the main writer like that worked with her, okay, has never seen Star Wars. And the woman's like, why do you want me on this project? She's like, I just need to know this is a good story regardless of my love of Star Wars. So like she needs someone in the writer's room who just... It was like, I thought it was about, like, there's a dog
George Lucas
in it.
Could have used that person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like a few people could use that person.
Well, it's also why The Watchmen worked. Because, like, Cord Jefferson, who worked on The Watchmen, had never read The Watchmen, the TV show version that Lemondoloff did. And I think it really benefited from, like, having a perspective of, you know, this totally different outlook of that universe. So I'm really looking forward to, not saying I'm really looking forward to it, but, like, if it's as good as Andor, or even as third of a good as Andor, it'll be better than the rest of these.
Yeah, it's tough. I would. They vary. The shows vary like a TV show would, right? Mm-hmm. And like Andor, incredible. I think the magic sauce of Andor was that you feel like you were living in the Empire, and you felt you were like, this is what this is like.
This is rising.
Now you fully realize is like why they're bad. So like the fact that this is 100 years before the Phantom Menace, I really want and I hope, and like I didn't see that in this trailer. I want them to explore what is the world of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Like, what is that? Like, Phantom Menace is kind of that, right? Which is like, we're on top of the world. This is like Jedi. And so I want more of that.
Yeah,
and so that's
really
all to say
sense
that.
Sense of them, though. They're just kind of very, they're like these aloof
cops. Like weird cops.
Priests,
right.
Sorcerers. Like, they're just like, very, yeah.
So the video games kind of have this like ancient knight vibe to some of their early stuff. And I just hope they explore that a little more because this trailer looks really good, but it didn't feel like it took place anywhere different. It just looked like it was just, here's a Star Wars world. Like, we're in jungles, we're in old rundown towns, you know, like...
Do you want there to be a sand planet? Do you want there to be a sand planet with a sandworm on it? Like, how many places are there to go? They did water planet. They did...
I want to see, like, more bustling cities in the height of this civilization like that.
Different
kinds of
cities, yeah.
Different types, yeah.
I did like and Andor. I really did. Sorry, the Mon Mothma city stuff, where it's like, oh, she's living in like modern times in the future. Like she gets cars and like they like.
It was awesome.
She lived in like a straight up House of Cards world. Like it was just modern day, but like cooler in the future. That's what I want to see more of. You're right. That'd be awesome. Yeah.
And I did one of the things that I genuinely thought was cool about the prequels was getting to see like Naboo and whatever the capital city is. I forget.
Coruscant.
Yeah. And like you see the lower levels of Coruscant in episode 2 where it's kind of shitty and grind. Like it was cool to see more.
You should watch. Yeah. Andor does that where if you ever wondered like, what does an apartment look like on Coruscant? You get to see it. Like it's shit like that.
Look like in the Star Wars world. Oh, we get that city. We get that night city.
Sweet.
Yeah. It's way more cyberpunk.
What does a prison look like in that world? It's awesome. It looks like.
Well,
a,
we've seen FTX. One, but
yeah.
Well, this one looks like FTX or whatever that name of it. THX.
THX. Right? Yeah.
It's really cool. We really can't speak enough highly about Andor.
Star Wars is really cool.
Yeah, the rest of Star Wars.
I got nothing
Wars,
else.
Whatever. Yeah.
Should we move on to this next trailer, the big event?
Oh man, yeah.
Harold and the Purple Crayon. Zachary Levi.
Guys,
what is happening?
Guys, I have such a specific story for this. Which
Tell
is
it.
I have recently started hanging out with Emma Tolkien, whose dad is Michael Tolkien, who wrote The Player and Deep Impact and a lot of other movies. He had done an original draft of Harold and the Purple Crayon years and years ago. And apparently, and had worked with Maurice Sendak on it, and like he is not Not happy.
I'm sorry to interrupt you real quick. I feel like we should clarify, Harold and the Purple Crown is a very beloved children's book that has been adapted.
Yeah, and it's like a little Charlie Brown kid, right?
Yeah, what? Now Zachary Levi.
Yeah, it's a little Charlie Brown looking kid with a magic crayon. It's a very simple children's book, if I recall. Yeah,
everything he draws with this purple crown comes to life. That's it. That's cool.
I've been watching Arrested Development, rewatching, and remember when Maybe becomes a fucking executive?
Yes.
They make jokes like this, where it's like, old man in the sea, make him young. Make it all the... That's what this is. Where it's like, Harold in the Purple Crown, can we make him like an adult? Can it be a superhero movie? Let's do it. Let's greenline it. We'll get Zachary Levi.
Is he Harold?
That's what fucking happens.
Yes.
He's Harold.
Okay. I thought Harold was a little boy, because he seems like too adult.
He's, no, he's Harold
that has inexplicably aged into adulthood within his storybook universe, and then uses his crown to cross over into our universe.
Wait, can I be honest? Wait, why are we doing this with Zachary Levi again? Like, he's already Shazam.
I don't know.
Nobody really cares for him. He came out as like a weirdo,
and he looks old. He doesn't. He's not like got. He doesn't have John Cena energy or anything. Like, there's no fun charisma to him. He's just like a really old Chuck.
And he looks like he's doing Shazam again. He's doing like, I'm just a kid. Like, he's doing the same Shazam bit where it's again, like, where he's like, I'm a kid. They also, there's like this meta thing where like the book is in the trailer. And
what?
I think after Barbie.
Jumanji? Like, is this a Jumanji?
I think this is a Barbie. I think after Barbie, there's going to be so many people who are going to be trying to show, like, they're at, like, Barbie is big, right? Barbie is a big deal. A movie about Barbie can be meta about how Barbie exists in our pop culture. Harold isn't that.
No.
And I feel like after Barbie, we're going to see so many movies try to be like, you know how you loved this and grew up and it really contributed. Like, I feel like I'm getting that vibe where it's like the legacy of Harold and the Purple Crayon.
Who is this for? Who is this for?
Nobody. Because it's not for anybody.
What Gen Z? Like, Gen Z still knows who Barbie is. What Gen Zer is like, oh my God, my childhood with Harold and the Purple Crayon.
Right. Like,
fucking crayon.
It took me until about... 10 or 12 seconds into this trailer for me to remember that the book existed. I had that oh right moment when I was watching this.
We haven't even described that he's an adult. Harold comes out of like it's a Barbie where he's coming from his world to like the real world with his crayon, right? And there's like a little kid who's like sarcastic and bouncing off of him.
And another adult man, inexplicably. I don't know if that's a friend of Zachary Levi or what's going on there. There's like a second guy.
I feel like this was written in a weekend after Barbie came out, and then they like took a month to shoot it. Like, that's the vibe I'm getting but
the idea isn't the same. It's not like a beloved toy, right? It's not just
not at all.
It doesn't have the
book.
Cultural cachet.
But it's acting like it does, right? Like, they should have just made a cartoon. Yeah. Just make a Harold cartoon, like a kid's
about
cartoon.
About a little boy who gets a magic crown that can, anything he draws comes to life, and how that becomes a problem for him. Gee, can we imagine how that could become an adventure for a little boy?
Well, they're trying to do this like meta thing where they're like putting a twist on the premise that is barely a thing to begin with, where it's like, you could just make a movie of this, right?
You know what? We're going to have a triple year. This is going to be like the Deep Impact, that other volcano movie. Dante's... I thought it was Dante's...
Dante's Peak.
Dante's Peak and Volcano.
Armageddon.
So this is going to be the year of If, that Ryan Reynolds movie with the imaginary creatures. It's going to be the year of Imaginary, that horror movie. That's like Blumhouse horror, if your imaginary friend was a horror... bear or something, and then there's gonna be this movie, and it's just like, okay, we got it, like the magical world of whimsy and children have imaginations, but like they all kind of look the same. Like, this and If specifically look like the same aesthetic, like when he draws that little bug or whatever, it looks like something from If, which that has potential. I hate to say it, but I feel
heard If is good from people that have seen it, but
yeah.
We're talking about Harold and the Purple Crown.
No, it's going to be terrible.
Weird decision.
It just, again, it feels like a subversion of something that doesn't exist yet.
They've been working on it forever. Like, it's been a script
and what's
forever.
With? Yeah. And, why is there like a cool action girl too in it? Like, what the? There's like a cast. There's like the girl with like the Sonic the Hedgehog hair. Is she a villain? What is happening?
He has like characters that come through from his book with him, and that's who the other adult is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really? I thought that was maybe his guardian or something. Like, I don't know, man. Why is he? Is he an orphan? Why is he hanging out with two grown men from an alternate dimension? I'm sorry, guys. I just saw Cry on set, and I really just am not comfortable with like children hanging out with adult men acting mm-hmm. like
nor
like
should
babies.
We. Yeah, yeah, no,
yeah.
This is it's just a nightmare. This trailer is a nightmare. Everybody should watch the trailer. Don't see the movie, but watch the trailer.
Yeah, it's Lil Rel trapped in a movie with Zachary Levi.
What was that? Okay, this is going to be a weird tangent, but what was that book? It was almost like a riddle book. It was just one sentence long. It was like not the Curious Case of something.
The Curious Case of the Dog at Midnight or something?
No. It was like every page had a picture on it, a very evocative picture. Like this was around the Jumanji area. I think it was by the same Jumanji guy and like just had a picture and then one sentence. And it would be like very creepy and spooky. It would be like a harp in the middle of a lake and it would be like, some say it's been here the whole time, and like I don't know, it's flying nuns. It's a really weird picture book. That
sounds like the Babadook.
Yeah, but it's like not supposed to be evil or like scary. It's just supposed to be like evocative and creepy, and like people have written longer form stories about these one sentence things. It's amazing, and I want them to make a movie about that. Make an anthology show about that book that like really like
about this book that I can't remember what it's called.
No, it's called the Lives of whatever. I'll figure it out later.
Okay. All right, we'll do that instead.
We'll move on to the next trailer.
I don't even know what I'd Google.
The book that I want. Harp
I don't
Lake.
Have too much. I don't have too much to say about this next one other than this trailer is an assault. It just keeps unfolding. It's just like, here's Robert De Niro. And you're like, okay. And then, by the way, this is for Ezra. That's the movie called. And then they're like, okay, cool. You used to Robert. Here's Rose Byrne. You're like, oh, okay. And then they're like, here's Vera Farmiga for like 1 second. Here's Rainn Wilson. Here's Whoopi Goldberg. Directed by fucking Tony Goldwyn.
He's also in it.
Ezra.
And
who's in it?
Yeah. The book is called The Mysteries of Harris Burdick, by the way.
Okay.
We got that.
Nice.
This is
go check that out, but I can't tell like if you're saying that that's a good thing or bad thing that this cast is so stacked, because it kind of looks like Silver Lining Playbook kind of vibes or something.
It's not a bad thing. It's just more like
is a stand-up comedian with an autistic child named Ezra, and he has to travel cross country to do the Jimmy Kimmel show, but has to decide whether it's worth it to sacrifice the attention to his son and what that could do to his son in order for his career. It seems like one of those big old dramas with a big old cast.
Yeah, it's like it's good thing or bad thing? Make you cry, not make you cry.
It looks quirky. It looks like it might make you cry. For me, it's like it could go either way.
Yeah.
I'm just more distracted by the fucking cast. Also, imagine going back, I don't know, 15 years and saying that there would be like this emotional comedy where the goal of the character is to be on the Jimmy Kimmel show mm-hmm. and like just being like the fucking Win Benstein's money guy. Really? Mm-hmm. Like, that's so weird to me that that's like the thing, the dream that he's going for. But yeah, what do you guys think? Drew, what do you think of this?
I think that Tony Goldwyn's grandfather has the best name that was ever changed for Hollywood. Which was Samuel Gelbfiz, but there's two Z's, and they're not what you think. It is
two Z's?
Two Z's and Samuel Gelbfiz. And
I didn't think there was going to be one Z.
Nope. There's a Z in the second letter. The A, instead of an A, there's a Z. It's like the definition of changed your name on the boat right over, and that made me realize that Tony Goldwyn was Jewish. I'm Jewish. That's not like a weird statement or anything. I just like never thought about him like
oh,
that.
I didn't connect until like last year or 2 years ago that he's Samuel Goldwyn's son or grandson.
It took Barbara Streisand at the whatever awards recently that Netflix was airing, the Screen Actor Guild Awards or whatever, telling stories at school where she was talking to Samuel Goldwyn and said his name, like his original name, and I was like, what the hell? Wait, what? That's such a... But, you know, it's Tony Goldwyn. What do we... Do we like him or not? Like, he's from...
I love Tony Goldwyn.
Yeah. It's a shorthand for the audience that this guy's a bad guy. It's from Tony Goldwyn.
Yeah.
And
this just it
from
to
Ghost
me, this,
on, he's just got bad guy face.
No, he's right. not. He's the president of Scandal. I think that's where most people are younger than us would remember him from. He's
that's
like
true,
the
yeah.
president from Scandal. But Bobby Cannavale and Rose Byrne, aren't they real life married? They're real life married.
Oh, okay, that makes a little more sense.
Yeah.
There's because to me this trailer
are
felt
they?
Like a randomizer. Yeah. It felt like they just took a computer and randomized a series of like actors and plot. And it that's again, it looks good. Like it looks very personal. I assume it is. I bet it's very touching and good. I just couldn't get over the slow, like the slow reveal of who's in it.
Yeah.
It just weirded me out, man. And then just seeing directed by Tony Coldwyn at the end, I just felt like I was having a stroke.
It feels
That's
very
all.
Much. It feels very much to that earnest '90s movie of like, you know, like a ghost, if you will. That I guess that's recombining Whoopi and Tony Goldwyn,
Whoopi
right?
And Tony,
and like,
yeah, yeah.
But Bobby Cannavale is just such a great, fantastic actor. If you've never seen him in that like season of Boardwalk Empire or like, you know, many of the other things he's done. The station agent.
Station
like,
agent,
he,
yeah.
He's mm. really good. Like, I know he plays a bad guy a lot, but, like, he's so good as, like, a dramatic, sort of tragic figure. I could totally see him, like, killing this role. But I won't see it because it seems sad and, like, dealing with issues.
It's gonna be,
yeah, it does.
I actually don't think it's going to be sad. I think it's going to be the idea is he... I mean, it seems like they say it in the trailer. He's not going to go on Jimmy Kimmel. He's going to snub Kimmel to be with his son. And it'll just be... Like, I don't think anybody's going to die. Maybe Robert De Niro, but like...
Why is he being invited on? Is it to do a Joker? Is he doing like a thing where he's just coming on to like talk about a
I think
kid?
He's just a comedian.
He's a stand-up
and they're
comedian,
like,
it looks like. Yeah.
Oh, he
yeah.
is. Oh, I thought yeah. he was putting his son on. I
no, no, no.
The invite. I was like, that's so weird.
Yeah, and so I think the idea is it's going to be like your dream versus your... And again, that's why it's so funny to me that like the dream is just to be on Jimmy Kimmel. That's I don't know. That
oh.
seems like such low stakes to me.
You know what? I don't think that's going to be the case because Kimmel's got like all those family value things going on. I think he'll actually want to be in the movie. So I don't think the reveal is going to be that he turns down the appearance because I think Kimmel
See,
will...
I think
be
we'll get
him.
A...
Yeah,
I think we'll get a Kimmel cameo. Uh-huh. I think it'll be a Kimmel-io. Yeah,
Kimmel-o.
I think that's the
there.
Idea. Is like Kimmel will be lurking. He'll be looming over this film, and then we'll be like, "Oh, there's Kimmel."
Yeah, we got
that's
him.
My
yeah,
guess.
There he was.
I like
got
it,
my money's
like
worth.
There's Kimmel. I'm Fighting With My Family. It was the movie that came to mind when I thought of like the premise of this. Is like, yeah, maybe it's like, yeah, he's the big thing that they're aiming for, and maybe they'll get there, maybe they won't, but he's gonna be in it. God damn
yeah.
it, Kimmel's going to be in it.
Yeah, I think he'll be in there. Any other thoughts?
I was just going to say the reveal of the cast, like how the names just keep... It's like getting beaten up by an acting class.
Yeah, it
like,
is.
Stop,
really
I'll
is.
See it, I'll see it, please.
They have so many people.
I couldn't tell the note you left. You were like, oh my God, the reveal of these actors. And when I was watching it, I just was like, oh no, this means that I won't see it. Like, because there's too many... dramatic actors. This feels like an Apollo 13 or a
right.
Forrest Gump, and that's just not my bag, baby.
This next one, this is The Greatest Hits. This is, I think, one of those premises that I was like, oh, of course. It's about a woman whose boyfriend, who seems like a dick, but
what?
Apparently isn't, died. And then she can travel back in time by listening to records.
Mm-hmm.
And she can travel back in time. Basically, like it's nostalgia, right? You listen to a record, you go, that brings me back.
Yeah.
Somebody was like, oh, what if it literally brings you back?
It's like About Time. It's kind of like the plot of About Time where she,
yeah.
like, you can go visit the past, but you can't really change anything. And it seems like less about the sci-fi. That's just like the device to explore like themes
it's a
of
very,
loss.
Yeah, it's a very loud metaphor because she asks in the trailer, like, I keep... If I could go back and save him, but it would mean that we would never meet. So it's like, you know, when a relationship ends or when you lose somebody, this is more about loss. When you lose somebody, yeah. very often, sometimes you'll find yourself wishing that you never knew them at all because
right.
then it would save you from that pain.
Can't tell you
this
something?
Is.
I cried. Yeah. I cried watching this trailer.
Oh, no.
And I cried. And things don't really get to me that much, but like, I you know, not even the music stuff so much, but like, I spend a lot of time thinking about like, past lately and just reflecting on my stuff and like this just felt very like
no
oh.
definitely yeah,
yeah.
I got you I've been there
I just yeah no I it's fine it's just I wasn't angry at this. It was just so obvious that I was like, why didn't someone make this already? And then also, like, I feel like I know the entire film. Which is like, they even show like, oh, here's this other guy, and she's interested with him. And it's like, why are you living in the past? You like, it's clearly about nostalgia and mourning and moving on, right? And so you kind of know, like, okay, I know what it's about, and therefore I kind of know what the message is going to be. I don't think she's going to save her boyfriend. Like, she's going to let him go and move on and date this other guy, or she's going to learn that you can't change the past. I think she should listen to the Jurassic Park soundtrack and fight dinosaurs. I think that would be an amazing thing.
No, she'd go back to 93, which she'd it go has back to be 93, her, yeah. her memory of seeing it.
And right. Quantum Leap rules.
By the way, if I did that... Wait. I'd be amazing. Like, I would just be 9 years old, so obsessed. I used to listen to that soundtrack every night going to bed, so
yep.
I know exactly
what okay, yep, I would make my parents put it on while we were, like, eating dinner. I just listened to it constantly.
But
so it's not the fun rules. Like, so she can't listen to, like, an old German record and kill Hitler,
is what I'm
hearing. Damn.
So, but, like, have you seen About Time? Like, because that movie was really subversive in the way that it seemed like it was a time travel movie that was going to play with the mechanics and be about, like, him just... going over and over and trying to get the girl, and then became like it veered right and became like this very heartwarming sort of meditation on like losing a like the loss of a parent and like being able to go back for a certain amount of time, and you know, but like the birth of your new child is going to like mess it up, so you have to choose one or the other. And like, I don't know, that movie was really brilliant and really touching and surprising, so I feel like this could be like that, or it could veer in a totally different direction. But her original statement of that would mean we never met makes me think that she is going to be successful in doing something, but it would have to be like a butterfly effect ending, or then like they don't know each other. She'll like go into a future or like a present where they just never met.
I hope it does something like that. By the way, Tom, did you recognize this woman?
Yeah, she's from Sing Street.
Yeah, we just watched Sing Street.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
Yeah.
Her dead boyfriend's new Superman.
Oh shit, he is.
He's that doofus that gets killed in Pearl. Whoops, I spoiled some of Pearl.
Oh, can I be honest? I thought that guy, when I first saw him in Pearl, I was like, that's the hottest man I've ever seen. He looks like Superman. That was the first time I
nailed it. Pearl. You nailed it.
Nailed it. I said it out loud in a theater. And then when they came through, my boyfriend was like, are you a witch? And I was like, no, I'm just really on point with this.
That's awesome.
Sorry, I love Pearl.
Should we keep going?
That movie. Yep.
Yeah, I got nothing else. The listener, there's only one real big thing about this one to me, which is that the reveal that it's directed by Steve Buscemi.
Yeah, he hasn't directed anything in a while, I don't think.
Trees Lounge?
That's the last one I remember, but that doesn't necessarily mean he hasn't made anything since, because that was a while ago.
He did some Boardwalk Empire episodes, I believe, like, again, going back to Boardwalk. So he directed some TV, Yeah, man, like, this looks good. It's, again, I feel like we're going back to this 90s, like, mid-90s Good Will Hunting era. Just, like, we're going back to the quiet dramas. I mean, I'm cool with that.
Yeah, just real quickly, mm-hmm. This is about Tessa Thompson is a crisis hotline operator who works the night shift. And it's just, it really does seem like it's just these long, meditative scenes where she's the only character on screen, and we're just watching her listen to these conversations and speak to these people.
Yeah, as you can probably assume, a lot of cameos... it looks like Rebecca Hall,
all the different voices,
Logan Marshall Green. Yeah.
I bet this was a play. How much do you want to bet this was a play before it was a movie?
Oh, like, I can believe maybe. It.
Because Bashir is also a big theater guy. So yeah, I bet.
Yeah. We talked about this in a previous podcast because we covered like the Sean Penn cab one that looked like a bad version of this.
Yeah, it looks like a bad version of, like a toy version of this.
Yeah, Daddy-O. But this is like, I just feel like now they have, it's just weird because it feels like all these movies are way more indie than they used to be because no one's making them, but the actors still want to do them.
Of course.
Does that make,
it's the accolades. It's the Academy Award nomination thing. Right. This has like become the thing where it's like, instead of doing the genre film, so you get like the credit of being like, you know, the Hammer horror guy or being whatever, like now you do what used to be mainstream dramas, like during the Weinstein era, to get your like you know, your Killers of the Flower Moon credit.
Yeah.
You know? but it's weird. It's not weird. I love Buscemi. I love the idea of this. I love the idea of like going back to dramas being indie, because that means that people have to spend more time on them and like actually make them good instead of like sappy. Like, yeah, like the 90s era of it was just so sappy to me that I just never, like, it never connected.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet this is going to be good. It's a, one person stuff is very hard for me. Like, get like four people. Like, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf is a movie that I find, for many reasons, riveting.
Oh, and it's
just four people.
Pontypool?
Like, it's Pontypool. Yeah, like, there is, you can make just a bunch of people in the room and make it riveting. It's just, you know, it's a challenge.
It's a challenge.
Repulsion, though. Like, you get the right actor or actress, and you can make a one or like a. Like Repulsion's one, like the one, what was it?
I have not seen Repulsion.
Oh, really? What about the one with Colin Farrell? He's in a phone booth. Was it called Phone Booth?
Called Phone Booth, but there's actually a lot
there's
of
more to Phone Booth.
Yeah, for sure. And there might be somebody that shows up here. I'm just saying, like, it's basically a one.
Well, yeah, but I saw, yeah. But like, I saw the Ryan Reynolds movie Buried.
Yes, yeah.
Where it's just him
I haven't
in the
seen
casket.
That.
Whole movie.
It kind of, this isn't like to insult this movie, but Tessa Thompson's character seems kind of just normal in the trailer. And so, like, I'm like, man, I hope she has, there's more to it. You know what I mean?
I
like,
imagine there's going to be.
Well, who decides to do this for a living? Just stay in their room all day and listen to other people, like, do Crisis Hotline. Like, that's its own kind of, let's unpack this, you know? Especially because Buscemi was like during 9/11, he was like, he just put on like his fireman.
He's a volunteer firefighter, yeah.
Yeah, and he just went down to like ground zero. So, I mean, like, I don't know, like, there's something there about like the public good or doing something selfless. But what kind of mentality or what kind of personality makeup it takes to just compulsively do that or to want to do that? Because there's
I hate to be dark about it. It means that there's at least one person out there whose last dying thought was, is that Steve Buscemi?
God.
That's got to be weird, right?
Yeah.
I don't think he was there the moment it happened, probably. So
no, but like saving people and like imagine getting saved and being like, is that fucking Steve Buscemi saving me?
What's crazy to me is, and it's a dark thought too, is like, how is he still healthy? Because like no one else who was down there during that period of time is you know, not without
well,
one problem.
He's rich. He's got that rich person magic.
He's got that Buscemi cash. That's
What do you think?
It's a legendary treasure in Hollywood.
game show called Buscemi Cash.
Like, that's what I want to know. He's like character actor. He doesn't really. I mean, he starred in Boardwalk. But how much money do you think he has? I was thinking about this on Walking the Dogs the other day.
I think he's probably fine.
fine, but like exactly how much money? Do you think?
I don't know.
You know, Google exactly how much
he's been acting steadily for 30 years.
Do you think he's made investments in New York real estate?
With
do you
major
think
roles in big movies. I don't know, man. I assume he's probably got some money.
I mean, his net worth is apparently $35 million, although net worth is one of the most.
They think Cody's worth millions.
Do you know what? Yeah. I'm worth $500,000, according to the internet.
That's amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
I wish.
Yeah, where is
let's
it?
Talk
you
about
send it to me? Is somebody like, holding it for me?
But I'm also 53 years old, so the trade-off there on the internet is really bad. Yeah. It's like I have to do like one of those demon choices. Devil's bargain. 53, but I have $500,000.
Yeah, you have to make the about time
choice. Right, that's not even that much money.
Well, not especially if we're jumping forward into the future where I would be 53 and the world is just a shelled-out apocalypse.
Don't get me wrong. I'd love to have that much money when I'm 53, but it's just like exactly what you're saying, which is like, everything sucks. And that'll probably be like, it's just like the cost of a burger.
Yeah, and also like, personally, I don't appreciate that I have to go to job interview, or I had to go to job interviews for like a good 2 years where everyone was like, why would you want to work? And also, don't you like qualify for AARP or something? Like it seemed like everyone had read, like Googled my name before an interview and was like, oh, well, she's worth $500,000 and she is 52 years old or whatever. I was just like,
it's
no.
Like Google is trying to sabotage you.
Yeah. Google or some. Yeah. It's like Google.
Let's talk about this next one. Yeah. Sweet Dreams.
Let's.
This is like
Johnny
Bad
Knoxville.
News Bear. Yeah.
Doing 28 days. Not 28 days it's, later, 28 days.
So 28 days, yeah.
This is I want to describe to people what this is first before they guess what the genre is. Because this is about a alcoholic who needs to get clean, and so he has to coach a softball team of misfits. And they call their team Sweet Dreams, and they got to win the game. Would you believe that it's more of a dramedy? Like, that's was to me the weirdest thing about this.
Yeah.
Like, that's a zany comedy, right? He doesn't get whaled in the balls
he
once.
Does. He does. There's
somebody gets whaled in the balls, and then he says, "I felt that."
Oh, okay. I missed that.
I thought for a second, I was like, are they just doing like a better Lady Ballers? Is this, I don't know. Maybe I've been influenced by watching some more news or something, but I was like, they're just going to do a Lady Ball. We're just going to have like another, or basketball or something. Like putting Johnny Knoxville right. in a sports movie seems like you're going in a certain direction.
It's the trope premise of all the 80s teen comedies, right? Where it's the clubhouse of misfits. Oh, we're going to lose our clubhouse. We have to pull together and win the big game or do the big talent show, do the one big thing to win the money to save our clubhouse.
Right. And then it's also the bad news.
Yeah. It's Bad News.
Yeah.
Bears,
Hardball.
It's Mighty Ducks.
Mighty Ducks.
But
yeah.
Like, the fact that this is so earnest is like, again, just like what we were just saying. Like
it's kind of like The Way Back with Ben Affleck. Like it's an addiction drama interwoven into this kind of zany misfit sports comedy.
Yeah,
and but the trailer's not that zany. We keep saying zany, and it's not really.
Yeah, that's well, that's the thing.
The premise is zany.
The premise is zany. Yeah, exactly.
The broad strokes is premise. Again, if you said Johnny Knoxville in a movie about a misfit group of softball players, you would have you would picture that, right? As like, oh, he's going to be hurting himself a lot, and like you picture that in your mind as being like a zany basketball. Yeah,
I'm picturing Chris Pontius in like a crotchless mascot costume.
Right,
the What Hot American Summer's team scene where they go and play the other team, and then they just get big rousing speech and decide to go home.
Google the poster to this, and you imagine that, right? Because it's just it's this. But I mean, I don't know about you guys. I am into this. I'm like, okay, let's.
You can tell that he cares about it. He's had friends who died of, you know, drug addiction and stuff like that. You could just really feel that this is probably a role that he felt was important to take. I don't know who directed it. Did he direct it?
I don't.
No,
think
it's
so.
Some person I've never heard of. But I mean, here's my. Judging from this trailer, I don't think this will be the movie. But after watching this, I was like, go for the Oscar, Johnny Knoxville.
Yeah,
like,
let's do it.
Like, make us all pay. Make 10 years from now, I want to be like, who would have thought that Johnny Knoxville would be given the get best actor or best director or whatever?
Yeah.
In the Fred Durst movie. Let's make it a Fred Durst movie.
I mean,
starring Johnny Knoxville.
You're really trying to clear up your bingo card, Dave.
Sorry. Yeah.
No, I was about to say, it is kind of like, you know, like getting that Michael Showalter shout out by Jessica Chastain for The Eyes of Tammy Faye, where it's like, oh, that's the first member of the state that got a Oscar nomination, you know? Like, but I like that. And I've been shitting on the idea of earnestness and Earnestness Goes to Christmas or whatever, goes home. Now I'm just saying earnest movies. I like the idea of a return to earnestness, the importance of being earnest, if you will.
Yes.
I do think that's a nice thing for this time because what it means is it's going to be a character study. These are all, what we're essentially saying is these are all character studies that have different spectrum of absurdity premises. You get to listen to music and go visit your old boyfriend. You got to take your autistic kid to Jimmy Kimmel. Like you got to, you know, stay at home and listen to a crisis phone line, and you got to be in an addiction recovery center teaching these kids baseball. Like, but they're all just character dramas.
They're adults. Let's make it clear. Yeah. It's a bunch of grown-ups playing a softball game.
I thought it was a kid league.
Are the adults, right?
No, those are adults.
Oh, yeah.
In the halfway house, or not the halfway house, but like a recovery house.
I thought I saw a kid in there. Maybe I'm confusing it for the end of Lady Ballers.
I think his daughter is there. Like, that's part of his. He's like, I want to be. Man, there's a line in this trailer. Johnny Knoxville is saying, I want to get sober. Prove to my daughter that I'm a good man and be her hero. It's like this fucking brutal shit to hear Johnny Knoxville say.
Yeah.
He's lived a hard life, man.
He talks about it a lot.
I mean, when I remember even in my 20s watching Jackass and looking at these groups and going this is not going to end well. Mm-hmm. I mean, for some of them it may, some of them it wouldn't, and that's exactly what happened, right? Where it's just like,
shockingly, most of them look all right.
I mean, short-term 12, because they're rich, because they probably have net worth of billions of dollars. It reminds me of like Short-Term 12. You guys remember that? Like that movie was so hyper earnest. It starred Brie Larson. It's by the people who made Miss Marvel, or Captain Marvel. It's like the husband and wife couple, but it's got Rami Malek, Brie Larson, John Gallagher Jr. It's just like a movie set in and Caitlin Dever, and it's a movie set at Keith Stanfield. I'm just gonna keep saying names. Everyone's in this movie, but it was before a lot of them were famous. It's set in like a foster kid home, and they're just social workers or caseworkers who are taking care of these kids and are just really. It's just a small scope film that has a lot of emotional depth to it because you really feel for every single character. It's just performances just stand out, and it's super sad, but really. So I think it's my boyfriend's favorite film of all time. It's a really beautiful message.
What film?
It's called Short Term 12.
Okay.
Yeah, check it out. I'll check it out. It's Lakeith Stanfield's first role. He's 18 in it or something.
Yeah. Oh, wild.
Yeah.
Then check out the trailer for Sweet Dreams, which has that pathos plus Johnny Knoxville accidentally getting them uniforms that say Sweet Creams.
Sweet Creams. We love that Sweet Cream.
Both of those things somehow. Yeah.
And him watching someone get hit in the balls. See, that's how you know it's growth.
Weird.
His balls are no longer the ones getting rocked.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, next trailer, Parasite the Grey. Parasite spelled wrong. They spelled it wrong. And this is, I assume it's based off a comic. This is a TV series. It is, they flaunt this, and so it's not created by, but it is basically some of the writers, is one of the writers is the writer of Train to Busan, mm-hmm. and also the director of Train to Busan. Mm-hmm. And Peninsula, the other writer, the writer of that is also involved. This looks fucking gnarly as shit. It's about it's basically everybody's venom. Yeah. This woman gets a venom virus, and then there's all these weird aliens, and their heads kind of burst out. I was gonna say that, or a little bit of honestly our pal Jason, a little John Dies at the End feeling to it.
Oh yeah, for some reason.
Where their heads burst open, and my favorite detail is that their eyeballs are intact and stay on these little antennas, and it's this lady with her parasite power fighting them.
I think she can control hers, or the idea is that she's more of a symbiotic parasite. I haven't read it, but would it surprise you to know that this is considered one of the more cerebral, dramatic mangas, horror mangas? It's a bit the theme of this week.
That's amazing.
But it also looks totally fucking nuts. I'm hoping it's an Attack on Titan level worthy.
I do like that it's kind of from the point of view of the invading little monsters too. Mm-hmm. It's about the humans are gonna try to track us down and eradicate us. They're getting good at figuring out which ones of us are mimics, and that's a cool idea. Also, I have to admit, for the first, because I don't think you, I think you, maybe my brain did a dyslexia thing and just corrected it, but I read it as just normal parasite. So I thought it was connected to the film Parasite. The first 7 seconds, somebody's head explodes. So I was like, oh, this is something different.
It would have been a hell of a sequel.
If I read the Wikipedia, again, no spoilers. It just says it explores philosophical and psychological questions such as the meaning of humanity, the role of instinct and love, and the inherent anthropomorphism of morality. Could be about Parasite movie. Could be the same thing.
I think there's going to be a lot to it. It's a whole series. And I can see this being a series, or at least, it's probably a mini series. I don't know.
It's a three parasite problem is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm? God damn that fucking, I just love how weird everything's gotten. Pop culture, it was always going to be this way. And I love that this can exist.
Yeah.
Because of CG, this, I think it's not the best looking CGI, but this is what I would call this is what I like when CGI is used to do something weird. And like you mentioned Resident Evil, this isn't the weirdest thing in the world, but it's weird enough that I enjoy it. I really like the aesthetic and weirdness of her using her weird head tentacle mm-hmm. to fight these creatures with exploding heads. And it's this is just weird and fun. I don't know.
Do you know that this was actually already a Toonami show? There was already an anime. They adapted this anime. There's been two live action movies in Japan. There was already an anime show about this. This is just a continuation that I think that's why it has the colon in it. Cause this is it's a continuation or a prequel, of the series.
Okay.
Cause the series is about a boy who becomes Venom friends with his symbiote or whatever. this is like a different, this is a different, like set in the same world, but different. I love it. I love that the themes of it are, if I'm just reading the genre right, body horror and like, yeah, moral, philosophical, like quandaries.
Hell yeah.
Love it. Emotionally, like devastating, like pandering, like ponderance of man and our role in the universe, but also like straight up Cronenberg body horror.
Yeah, just a bunch of squidbillies looking at the trolley problem.
Yeah. And...
yeah, it's like a good place.
Yeah.
The needs of the many.
It's funny. I don't even see it as body horror, and I think that's because of the CGI. Like, it's such a... It's such an effortless transition.
It's so
like,
scary looking, though. You can't imagine, like...
Oh, it's freaky looking.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Let's talk about this final trailer.
Let's do it.
Let's crack this nut. This is Pool Man.
Oh, boy.
Now, this is... this is written, co-written, and directed, and starred in by Chris Pine, who, boy, I love Chris Pine. He is such a fucking maniac. And no one, like Hollywood was like, you're the pretty boy. You're the new Kirk. You're next superhero. And he's like, no, I just want to be a weird little freak. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And then he stripped down naked like and ran out of the building.
He's running around through Hollywood.
He's a hot man, but like with the brain of Barry Keoghan or something.
I love
American,
him.
American Barry Keoghan. He's just a weird little freak boy.
He's such a weird little freak, Chris Pine.
Feral man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so he made this movie with fucking Annette Bening, who I fucking... love.
She's great, yeah.
Jennifer Jason Leigh. And
I
Danny DeVito.
Love.
Yeah. Danny DeVito, Ray Wise is in this.
Oh my god, I did not see Ray Wise in this. Maybe I looked away.
Apparently he's in it.
Holy shit.
And this is all to say, this movie is not getting good reviews.
I don't care. You just named...
I don't care either.
You just named Chris Pine. You telling me this movie has Chris Pine, Jennifer Jason Leigh, and the dad from Twin Peaks, I am in.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, again, it's not Kirk Chris Pine, it's Stretch Chris Pine. It's Smokin' Aces Chris Pine.
Yeah.
It's, we're going to be, I'm going to be a fucking, a little freak Chris Pine. It is a film noir.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
It's apparently like a bunch of film noir squished together. He plays a pool boy who, I thought this was funny. He cleans one pool in a, like a shitty apartment building that apparently only he swims in. So that's
like
his job.
Like, yeah. I like it. So it's an L.A. noir? I couldn't tell if like, they were in L.A.
It's an L.A. noir. It's a Big Lebowski for sure.
Jennifer Jason Leigh is on such a comeback tour. Like, if you saw that new season of Fargo, she's crushing it. And I love her so much. And Ray Wise, I mean, come on. There's no way this movie can be bad. It's kind of how I feel about that Lucy in the Sky movie that I never saw, which is by the guy who did Fargo. But everyone says it's terrible, but he made Fargo. How bad could it be? He made Legion. How bad could it be?
I think some of the best artists make very big swings.
Yeah.
And that means that you're going to miss sometimes. So yeah. I can kind of believe it. Tom, you've heard about some reviews of this.
Been making the rounds for about a year in festivals and stuff. So I know people who've already seen it. I've heard it's like Greasy Strangler level anti-comedy.
Yeah, so I'm going to love it.
Great. Yeah, it's like the Heidecker or like Neil Hamburger movies, whatever. They're not their on cinema characters, but like they're the actual movies they made, the comedian and whatever the Heidecker one was. It's like hard to watch because it's not what you're expecting. You come in thinking it's gonna be one kind of movie, and then it turns out like anti-comedy is a hard sell when you come in expecting something else. But I imagine that there's something about this movie I'm really going to enjoy.
Yeah, my hope is this is a movie I like and that I will totally understand when other people tell me they hate it. You know what I mean?
Like Fire Walk With Me. It totally misunderstood in its time. Another way Weiss joined. Or Hudsucker Proxy. I mean, there's so many movies where people did not like it when it came out, and maybe they just need some more time to realize how much of a genius Chris Pine is.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out.
He'll be the last person remembered during this era. Like, you know, like 200 years from now, they won't know Obama's name, but they'll know Chris Pine's. I'm telling you.
It's going to be Chris Pine and Harry Styles. It's just going to be half the cast of Don't Worry, Darling.
Don't Worry, Darling.
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know what to say about this. It's just the fucking... Yeah, I guess it's a weird noir. It's very, like, I saw a review saying that it's a big inside joke that they don't let the audience in on.
I love that. That's my favorite genre of stuff. It's like, this is some weird anti-comedy shit.
I have to see Pool Man. Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
You can even tell from the trailer. You're like, there's the vibes on this is weird.
Yeah.
It's got weird vibes. Or like, I mean, didn't Under the Silver Lake get bad reviews? And I really like that movie. Yeah.
Reviews,
but and that's a great fucking movie.
Not only is it a great movie, but it's an unsolvable ARG. Like, there are codes and cryptographs and everything hidden in that movie that
you love them.
Yeah, well, and you can solve it to a certain point, but they got the guy to make the cryptographs who solved the fucking Caesar cipher, which was like several hundred years old. So he made it too hard, and so we like people on this Reddits and stuff. They've gotten to a certain point of figuring it out. Like, we can follow some of the codes, but then it just trail leads dead because he made it too hard. And I love that about it. Or else it's unsolvable, kind of like the movie itself. But that's my favorite kind of like weird noir. If you're going to do an Inherent Vice, like, I'd rather it not be 3 hours long. I'd rather it have like weird clues and like just be...
Get in, get out.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of which, let's move on.
All right. Let's thank some more producers, starting with Psychic Bigfoot.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you to David Knife Boot Hansen. Big weekend for Knife Boots. Beat. Thank you to Deborah is awesome, Barbara is great, and Cancer Can Go to Hell.
Thank you
to Dracula, the bus driving vampire. Thank you to Driftless, God Emperor of Hype. Thank you for watching Lair of the White Worm.
You're welcome.
Oh, yes.
Thank you to Ed Nog. Thank you. Thank you to Exploding Runes.
Thank you.
Thank you to Funky J Mostly Comes Out at Night. Mostly.
Thank you
to Heathcliff's Helping Handfuls.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
to Hey Tom, when are we getting a sequel to Stitches?
Hey, thanks. Let me swoop in here. Thank you to Ombre.
Thank you.
ImpossibleWorlds.net. Issue 3 is out now. Gorge yourself on our fiction. Gorge.
Thank you.
Thank you to Jay the Crow Baron says, build a guillotine in rich people's yard. 2024.
Thank you.
Thank you to Chris Shanovich.
Thank you.
Thank you to Lieutenant Frank Drebin, Police Squad.
Thank you.
Thank you to Look Mime on a podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you to Mackenzie Fuck Shuffling with Willem Dafoe's Confusingly Large Dick Chill.
Thank you.
Thank you to Mercurial Oz.
Thank you
to Mike the Hell Diver. And thank you to Mongolian Throat Skanking.
Thank you.
Are you guys allowed to change names for your producers? Or are they allowed to change names every once in a while?
Yeah, they change their names frequently, actually. Some of them have.
Yeah.
That's a really good perk. It's a really good perk.
Yeah,
guys.
I mean, for people, producers out there who want to change your names, the change happens as fast as I do.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, send those messages. I'll get around to it. That's how we work around here.
Yep.
Should we talk about news stories?
I guess so. Mm-hmm.
They're making another live-action Popeye. Why not? Fuck it. Straight to hell. Let's go straight to hell.
Straight to hell, man. Let's ride this all the way down. Yeah.
The original was so weird. Like, I never understood. Like, the Altman movie creeped me out as a kid. Like,
it's legendarily weird.
It's just, why? Why did they do that? So,
I'm sorry. Finish your thought.
No, I was going to say, like, whatever they do with this Popeye can't be as weird of a choice as doing that Popeye the way they did it with Robert Altman.
I was going to say...
No, no, you say.
The thought I had was, it feels like it was a best case scenario back with the Altman movie, because they had Robin Williams in Popeye fake prosthetic arms doing as good a Popeye impression as you're going to get from somebody.
Yeah. Like, sometimes I think the batshit, like, I still think the 93 Super Mario's is the best version of Super Mario you can have.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Where it's like, let's just go, again, ride this fucking crazy worm straight to hell.
Right.
Not ironically,
let's just,
it's the best one. Not even best
yeah,
Mario.
Yeah, let's just
but
make
like,
it weird.
Yeah, best video game adaptation, I would say. Like, it's just,
I think,
bonkers.
Yeah. I want to reiterate, the way the Lego movie did what it did, the Barbie movie is going to do this to us, right? We're going to get, after Barbie movie, we're going to get so many studios going, all right, let's green light a live action version of X and Y, and let's make it like meta and weird. And like, you know, like, I think studios are going to try to lean into it.
I think I see this all in a different like paradigm than you do, Dave, because I agree with you, but I don't think I think Barbie was indicative of just like a trend that was already happening. Making the live action version or making a more adult version of, like, you know, Sonic the Hedgehog, whatever. Like, this, the IP stuff has been going on for such a long time, the mining of your childhood, that this is just like, I guess Barbie's just like the toy equivalent. Now Mattel can do it to Polly Pocket and all these things.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, we're definitely going to get more toy shit.
Yeah.
You're right that we've been doing this for a while. I guess it's more of a hope, because we did this live action thing, right? We did that Popeye in the 80s and 90s, and then we said, okay, let's not do that ever again. Like, we sort of soured on it.
Yes.
And now we're kind of circling back to it. And now Barbie has shown, like, not only can you do it, you can get nominated for an Oscar.
Unless you're Greta Gerwig.
So, yeah. Yeah. But that's all to say, like, I kind of like that they're like, fuck it, let's do it.
Yeah.
It's from the screenwriter of Sexy Beast.
Sure.
That's perfect.
And The Sopranos.
Perfect.
And I'm like, all right, yeah.
You know what? Why though? Am I missing something about Popeye? Like, was there something dark and seedy about Bruto and Wimpy and all these characters? Because, like,
I mean, there's something dark and seedy about Popeye.
I guess he's a man who eats spinach just to beat the shit out of people. But, like,
he's just a grimy old sailor.
He's not quite a comic book hero. I guess I assumed he was because, you know, he has a superpower and whatever. But no, he's a comic strip hero. That's different. It's more of a Marmaduke.
It's another where it's like, I'm not sure who this is for.
What world is this in? And what?
Yeah.
So, like, when they used to make comic strips about just like people your dad knew.
like
Andy Cap.
Yeah,
yeah, you're right.
Doonesbury. It's like it's just gonna be
check out this guy.
Like, Popeye is like, is he a superhero? Or kinda, he's this guy I go drinking with every now and then. He just beats the shit out of everybody.
He's just kind of a dickhead who thinks he's really into health food because he eats spinach from time to time.
Let's do this, guys.
Like, that's it.
Let's make comic strips into a thing. It's not just Marmaduke or Garfield. Let's make Dilbert, but it's like with, you know, Tim Robinson.
Let's make Dilbert.
I'm saying, wait till he dies, then mine his corpse for material. I mean... And just make it overtly racist and horrible, and like that's the character. And it's,
Scott Adams is doing it for us.
That's what I'm saying. Like, make it a commentary on just office work life being so incredibly racist and terrible.
I want Kathy. I want a Kathy movie.
Chocolate act.
Like, so I actually think you could adapt that, right? Like, you could adapt that into a very fun and nice comedy. Like, it would be...
It would be like a train wreck, but for a menopausal woman.
Yeah. Shit, now that I've convinced myself. I said it as a joke when it first came out of my mouth, but now I'm like, fuck.
Family Circle is just a Mark Wahlberg religious film.
Yeah, it would be.
He can have Family Circus.
Yeah, Family Circus is all CGI. It's the first only CGI movie.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's get 20 Popeye, live-action Popeyes. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah, just like, make them all nightmarish and weird. Just try to one-up the Altman film.
I just want to say, mob stuff.
Yeah, fuck it.
Well, I guess it's like The Wire. That season 2's at the docks. This is the dock version of
exactly.
Yeah, the spread.
Yeah, fucking Popeye finds a container full of dead sex workers from Russia.
Oh, yep.
And spinach.
Yeah. That's how he's able to open it.
I'm really interested. There's a Wimpy's Burger where my boyfriend lives in Tulare, like kind of near Bakersfield, and like I was just like, that's a weird branding, like a weird IP. A weird guy from like a secondary character from like a Popeye thing. It's just like Popeye doesn't appeal to me in like any like food or TV or movie kind of way. So I'm really interested to see what they do with this.
Right. Yeah. And for people listening and wondering, like, what's the difference between making this and making a shitty Purple Crayon movie? My answer is I don't know. I don't know why I'm excited about the idea of a shitty Popeye movie. I think it's just. Right now, it's like it could be anything, and like I hope it's not. Like, I think the Herald one is like trying to be mainstream is its problem,
and it's like, high.
Yeah, that too.
It's a big strike against it for me.
Yes, but that I think it also is trying to be like Marvel-esque, and I'm like, no, go off the rails,
Sexy like Beast. This. Come on, like that means Barge Cat's probably gonna be in it. Maybe Barge Cat will be Bluto.
Oh yeah, I need this to be.
That's
I just need it to be completely unhinged. That's all.
Yeah. Do we have any names for this yet, or anybody?
No.
Sexy Beast guy.
Yeah, that's it.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, we have not much for the next story, which is that they're readapting the Neverending Story into another live action. I assume live action. It's from the studio that did The King's Speech.
What does that mean? No.
They did Lion as well.
What is going on today? No, yeah. I'm sorry. That's so weird. The Sexy Beast guy is doing Popeye. We have all these serious dramas starring Johnny Knoxville.
Yeah, it does feel like we've went into an alternate dimension.
Fuck. What is going on?
The King's Speech wants to do a never-ending story.
Yeah. No, it's going to be like Tim and Eric come back, but they're doing like a really serious... It's like when Tim Heidecker does his like serious music stuff, and you're like, is this a bit? And he's like, no, seriously like making folk music and like it's not in character and you're like,
that would be impossible. It would be, you could not sit through an acoustic. If
do,
Tim Heidecker sit down
people
on a
do.
Stool, I know, but it would be so hard the first time.
His Patreon, if you are subscribed to his Patreon, it's all sincere. Like he writes
I
it.
I believe
in,
it, but it would.
It's so weird. It's so fucking weird.
If he was came in the room and sat down on a stool and started playing songs, you'd be ready to laugh. Like you would assume it was a bit.
This is what happened when I interviewed him in 2011 and then saw, like, he got kind of angry with me. I couldn't tell if that was a bit either because I kept being like, okay, but the songs are like a joke, right? Like, they're, like, and he's like, no. He's like, they're dead serious. Like, he's like, this is something that means a lot to me. It's very personal. And I was like, waiting for the punchline because it's during the Tim and Eric era.
He has to know.
Of course he knows. But, like, also I think that's part of the bit is, like, to have that, like, part of himself that it's just walled off and it is hyper sincere. Like, he's an amazing guy that has managed to not do mainstream anything. He was in what, Us? Like he's in 2 Seconds of Anna.
Yeah, he's great in that.
He's making decisions to like be outside of that system, and I'm like a huge On Cinema fan. That's an extended universe
that
of
is,
itself.
That is, yeah.
Yeah.
That
yeah. So he's really
so
funny.
Weird.
He's really funny, but I love the idea that there's some sincerity there that like he's just like keeps very, very private, kind of like Bo Burnham or something.
Yeah,
like where he's like,
listen, we all contain multitudes. That's why listen, that's why Sexy Beast wants to make a Popeye. And that's why King's Speech wants to make a Never Ending Story.
Stop.
I think this'll it's one book, right? It's just the one book.
As far as I know.
You mean in the movie? Like,
But the movie the movie goes beyond. I mean, the book goes well beyond where the movie ends.
Wait, I'm sorry. Was there actually a Never Ending Story book?
Yes.
I thought it was
just
the book in the movie.
No.
I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong, but in the book, it's also a boy reading a book.
Holy shit.
That's the idea. Is the boy goes into a book. It's German as shit, which I feel like you can tell by the bleakness of the story.
It's a Wolfgang Peterson movie, isn't it?
Yeah.
The sequels are the one I remember. Like, weirdly, I don't remember the Never Ending Story. He doesn't go into the book in the first one. He's just reading about it. In the second one, he goes into the world, right? He's just reading about
it. Yeah, he turns into Jonathan Brandis.
Yeah.
That's all to say, like, are they going to make, like, 5 of these?
I don't know. It's never ending.
It is.
It could just keep going.
Make the Wishmaster.
Do you mean the Pagemaster? Because,
the
Wishmaster is definitely different.
Both, honestly.
Making the same movie and have it
We need a new Wishmaster.
Yorgos Lanthimos. Yeah.
we're well overdue for a new Wishmaster. Speaking of well overdue, we need to keep moving. Let's thank some
all
producers.
Right. All right, more producers. Big thank you to Mr. Tell Your Wife how many Patreon subscriptions you have before you agree to buy a house. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, no.
Thank you to musical guest Henry Garfield.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to No One Can Hear You Scream in Space McNulty.
Thank you so much.
Thank you to Norm from Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you to Pete for Pagel.
Thank you so much.
Thank you to Numenol Ultra Microscopic Silicol Volcano Coniosis Anti-Disestablishmentarianism Jones.
Thank you.
Thank you to pre-order TikTok superstar Jason Parsons' new standalone ticking clock thriller and dark satire called I'm Starting to Worry About This Black Box of Doom.
Thank you.
Thank you to RevMD.
Thank you so much.
Thank you to Ricky Cilantro.
Thank you.
Thank you to Rosemary's Baby from Eraserhead.
That's the one.
Thank you.
Thank you to Screaming Horse Pyramid.
Thank you.
Thank you to Sorry Cop, world's most laughable centrist.
Thank you. Okay, let me swoop in here. Thank you to Steven.
Thank you.
The conveniently placed self-destruct button on the top of every baby's head.
Thank you.
Thank you to the ghost of Dave Thomas.
Thank you.
Thank you to the Midnight Patron with Patrons at Midnight.
Thank you.
To the O'Neill Savage.
Thank you.
Thank you to the 2B Terror Bunny says, the strikes may be over, but egg David Zaslav for fun and profit.
Thank you.
Thank you to the 7Bs.
Thank you.
Thank you to Tiger Drawers Pratt Thompson. Raindrops keep falling on my head.
Thank you.
Thank you to Tip Drizzle.
Thank you.
Thank you. Tux.
Thank you.
Vincent with a Y. Like Parasite with a Y.
Thank you.
Thank you to Why Didn't You Take a Flying Fuck at the Moon?
Thank you.
And thank you to your mom.
Thank you. God damn.
Dave.
I feel like...
We're nearing the second hour.
Yeah, I know.
Guys,
Jesus
Christ. I said we come in under 2 hours, so let's...
That's true. So I feel like I need to ask you if you have a movie that deserves more hype.
Yeah, and in the fashion of this episode, I have two. Tom.
I feel like I need to ask you if
we have like 30 trailers.
A movie that deserves one.
No.
Lambo.
I have two. Two. Damn it.
You're taking these movies.
This isn't my fault, guys. I had nothing to do with this.
I know.
Can't blame this on me.
Okay. Okay. So this first one, I'm actually not 100% on. I just saw the trailer and I was like, I want
to
talk about this because
I
really like the premise.
I'm surprised at your inclusion of it. So yeah, please get into it.
I really like the premise. I don't know about the execution. The name sucks. If the name is All You Need is Death, which I think is a dumb
title.
I thought
it was going to be like a sick-ass like Beatles horror movie or something.
Right.
No, I think that's ironic, yeah?
Well, yeah, yeah.
It is. The premise is it's about a haunted song, which I really like the idea for. It's an old-timey folk song in Ireland, and it's about this like woman whose job is to basically like discover ancient and old songs, record them, and immortalize them. And there's clearly a message in the movie kind of about that, of like, you know, let some things come and go. Some things don't have to last forever. Like, I think there's a moral there. But basically, they show up at this, like, rich lady, or I don't know if she's rich. No, it's like an old rundown residence. They're tracking down this song that doesn't have a name. And this old woman who is the last person to know this song and has decided to pass it on for that reason. She has a weird puppeteer son, which I feel like they're going to get a little mileage out of.
It's Irish. This Ireland, like it's an Irish thing, I think.
Yeah. And so she sings this song and it creates some sort of fuck curse, it seems like.
It reminds me of the movie Dark Song, if you guys have ever seen that.
Right? I have. Yeah. Dark Song was good.
I have not seen Dark Song.
Dark Song's good, but it gave me the same vibes of like maybe this is a horror, pretending to be a horror film, but it's actually, again, just like a meditation of grief and loss in some way.
Yeah.
Or like a lost culture. Like, again, this really plays into this week's vibes of like, haha, oh, no.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, this only has one review right now, which is, it's a positive review, but like, that's all to say that the trailer didn't really like, I didn't love the trailer. Like when the ending line where she says like it does go the closest name it could go by, she says something really dumb and I forget what it was.
Love is a knife with a blade for a handle.
Right. I was like, well, that's why you wouldn't use the, like, yeah, that's draft one of that song title.
Oh no, I thought it was supposed to be a joke because then like it's like that and you're like, okay, that's the title, and it's like all you need is death. It reminds me of the original title for All You Need Is Kill. Isn't that the name of the Day After Tomorrow or whatever? Not Day After Tomorrow. Lift, Die, Repeat. That one.
All You Need Is Death.
That's clever. I thought it was doing a clever thing. I don't know. I think there's hope for this because the trailer isn't hardcore. Because it's not hardcore, it might be a caveat type of deal, like an indie, like more of like a psychologically weird movie.
Yeah. Like I said, I think this deserves attention. I'm just not sure.
I like some of the images in the trailer, and I like the premise, but the trailer itself was really strangely put together and didn't really sell the premise. So I was, it really kind of left me hanging, honestly.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's not a great trailer. But I'm super curious about it. Unfortunately, this one is like still in festivals and shit.
So damn.
Both of these aren't ones that we're going to see anytime soon. Maybe the next one will be this year. And this next one I'm very interested in. It's called Dead Male. I've heard a lot of stuff around it. It's at South by Southwest right now. It's been compared to Fargo, which is never a bad thing.
Yeah.
It's a very good premise. It's not one that's like, oh, why didn't I think of it? It's just simple, where it's a guy who is tied up and has clearly been kidnapped, and he's able to send a letter, not a phone call. He's able to get to a fucking mailbox and send like a help me letter, and then he's dragged away. And it's the story of the post office worker whose job it is to track down quote unquote dead mail, which is mail that you don't know where it's supposed to go or where it was from.
And they're going
to get entangled, I assume, with this elaborate plot, like this like kidnapping shit and stuff like that. It's shot in like this grainy, low budget. It's got an 80s aesthetic. And one of the things the reviews say that I really like is they're like, it's not Stranger Things. It's the 80s is ugly.
It's
the 80s sucks. Yeah. It's not about how great the 80s was.
I really, I watched this trailer three times. Loved it each time.
Yeah,
didn't
I
get
loved
that plot.
This trailer.
Didn't get that plot at all. Did not.
Really?
I did not get that plot at all. I thought
that's
that
great.
Opening shot was like something that happens at the end. So like, I guess I was right. I don't know. It looked really good. The cast looks fantastic. It looks like this is like another up and coming star group. Like the guy that they hire to like the hitman or whatever that they hire looks great. Or whatever he is, like the guy.
He's their investigator. He's the guy that's got to track it down.
Yeah, but they say something about him that's really funny, and his like appearance is like very quirky.
They make it seem like they're bringing. He's like he can track down anything, and it's like a low angle hero shot of him walking down a hallway, and it's, you know, he's just a mail service guy.
I love it. It has very vibes of Fargo. Very vibes.
The Fargo-est thing, and it didn't even occur to me until you mentioned, until Dave, you said that somebody compared it to that, was...
Yeah.
Or Simple Plan. Yeah, it's like...
More Fargo, although obviously he was aping Coen's on Simple Plan, but like... It's the shot where the guy has put the letter in the mailbox, and it's just a standard blue mailbox right in front of the kidnapper's house. Like, he only gets maybe 100 yards down the driveway and sticks a letter in the mailbox. And the kidnapper, there's nothing he can do about it. Have you ever tried to get a letter out of a mailbox? You can't do it.
Yeah, it's great. It's such a dumb premise, but it's,
staring at the mailbox and, like, trying to beat it open, and realizing he can't get the letter out of there. It's such a funny problem in such a dire situation, which is what made me think of
it. But also, hilariously, you can't open the mail. That's illegal. You can't open someone else's mail. So what are the chances of, like, if it doesn't have an address, like, it's like, that's a real conundrum. Like, I don't know.
Right, because, you can sit there after the mailman picks it up. You're probably sitting there like, okay, they won't open it, will they?
Yeah.
Like, what are they going to do? There's no address on it.
It's just written on, like, a postcard.
Oh, right,
It's not in an envelope. He just writes something on a scrap of paper and puts it in the mailbox. Right.
But it is one of those, like, I don't know, one of those delightful, like, dumb problems.
Right,
like
it's
you're
a
saying.
Very stupid problem.
And I love when a crime film has that, like, stupid problem.
And that's why it's set in the 80s, right? Because there's no tracking, there's no way that he would have even, if he's kidnapped, he doesn't know what
I assume so, yeah.
That's
it's just,
so
yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just,
I hope this, oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I hope this is going to, we're going to keep hearing about this one, you know? I'm excited to watch this develop and to see it eventually, because it looks like a lot of fun.
It's, I think, their first time, these guys. I don't think
I think it's the second film, I think. I'm not certain.
They got some big South by Southwest hype for them, so, like, good on them. I've liked a lot of those big movies that have come out of there.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to harp on this, but I feel like I know who did the All You Need Is Kill. No, that's not. Never mind. I don't. I thought it was my dude Kill List, but nope, it's not.
I also wanted to give a quick update. In A Violent Nature, that Friday the 13th movie that's just from the perspective of the killer, there's a full trailer now.
Oh, yeah.
So you guys can go watch it.
I thought you were about to tell me it was out to watch.
It's coming out May 31st. Mm. It is coming out fairly soon. The trailer, it looks gorgeous. Maybe we'll do it on next week or something like that.
Okay, cool.
I don't know.
Let's do that. Well, speaking of next week... That's a sode! We've done it!
That's a show!
Oh my gosh. Drew, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you. Thank you. Love to be here. I did not pick this amount of movie trailers, so I'm not going to get blamed.
It's all on
for
Dave. He adds more each week. I don't know why.
So we normally we have a conversation where we say, is there any trailers we want to cut? Mm-hmm. And we didn't have that conversation. So I blame everybody else but Dave. That's what I do.
Well, I just like that they're all the same movie. That.
I blame you, the listener. I blame you, the listener.
I blame me too.
Kind of like the movies we talked about, this will just be a 2-hour long meditation in just thinking about life and philosophy and why Barbie is just going to be so endemic in the next 20 years of other kind of movies that are coming out. And guys.
Do you want to hit your plugs again?
Hit your plugs.
Where can people find you? What are you doing?
Passionfru.it. So fru, like spelled FRU.it. That's sign up for our newsletter. We are, like I said, we are a creator labor organization and news outlet that is, we're starting a Patreon soon. We have a Discord. We're doing a lot of like resources and guides for creators who need help. You know, just anything in the landscape because it's a really as Dave and I have talked about a lot, it's a minefield out there. Creators don't have any rights for their content on the online space, and there needs to be some action about it. I'm not sure if it's going to be like a union or a guild that needs to happen. I think maybe it's people need to start realizing that their small businesses are small businesses with creative stuff. So that's sort of what I'm looking at right now. But it's also a really good website. We do news. We do, like I said, guides. And we have some really talented staffers there. So check us out. If you get this in time, check my Instagram, because we will have a Discord thing tomorrow. And if not, you can catch it on our YouTube channel, where we also have Reactorverse and a couple other shows that are really awesome. Check us out.
Awesome.
Cool. I'll plug our Patreon. Patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. GAMEFULLY. Unemployed. We have exclusive podcasts like Tom and Jeff Watch Batman, Fox Mulder's a Maniac, Star Trek The Next Futurama, and Spiel Boys. We watch movies every Friday night on our Discord. We have a great Discord community, so check that out as well.
We also have a store. Head over to GamefullyUnemployed.com where you can find a link to our Teespring store, where we have all kinds of cool original artwork and designs you can get on t-shirts, mugs, stickers, posters, all sorts of things. So slap your dead male peepers onto that.
Mm-hmm.
The audience can't see this, but I have a Fox Mulder is a Maniac poster.
Oh, it's
blurring out. It's only showing him. It's blurring out Mulder, his background. Yeah. That's so good.
Yeah, it's such a good poster. I need to reframe this, but it's so good.
Yeah, it is so good. Started that. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's a great, great poster by Starlene Hodge.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's long enough. Say
goodbye,
everyone.
We can wait. We can wait 5 minutes to get the two. All right.
No, we can say goodbye.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Our music is produced by Chris Corlew. Find him on Twitter at TheCorlew or go to shipwrecksailor.bandcamp.com. Our channel artwork is by Michael Vincent Bramley. For more of his work, go to mvbramley.art. Episode artwork is by Justin Brown. Available on Twitter as @JustinTBrown or at artnessbyjustinbrown.com. And finally, additional artwork by Starlene Hodge. You can find her work at starlenearts.com or Twitter @StarleneX. Goodbye now.